Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 84. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, mate. All week off. Recharge the batteries.
Was it for you, maybe, dude? For you? I mean, Stu is out gallivanting. As I said on the solo show, probably, I don't know what he's doing, robbing banks, wild women, who knows what was going on in his life. Meanwhile, I cut a solo album.
About time. And about time you put some effort in,
Dave.
And
can I say, a very well-reviewed solo album from the...
It's been a pretty poor form for you for a long time now.
Tell that to the Michael Kellershims, the Adam Pines.
I'm glad you're finally getting back out there.
Adam Crouch. I mean, these guys, a lot of depth, Dave. Like, Ed Brubaker, solo book. I mean, it was very much so for me like John Bon Jovi cutting a solo album. I did feel I was missing the band.
That sounds terrible, yeah.
No, Destination Anywhere, check it out, kids. Blaze of Glory.
That sounds terrible.
No, yes. Blaze of Glory, Young Guns 2 soundtrack. It was enjoyable, but I did miss Stu. I missed what you brought to the table, Stu. It was a shorter show than normal. I did feel that if I kept going solo, it was pretty quickly going to become the Hall of Mirrors for Dave.
See, I'm amazed you didn't pull out like a 6.5-7 hour episode epic. And you just let all your rants out just for like a month. Just
yeah, I know.
You just sit there and have this cathartic release into the microphone.
The thing is, like, you can have a rant. Like, I did 20 odd minutes on Ed Brubaker's book, and I actually got a lot of content in that time. Whereas if we'd done it, we would have probably done, you know, 35, 40. But in 20 minutes, covering a full book that's 80 pages, you pretty much do cover it. Like, you know, a fair bit. And I took, you know, listeners on a trip back to the 90s and stuff as well, man. Yeah. Like, I mean, check it out, Stu. This is a highly ranked show on iTunes. So you probably should, if you want some tips on how to actually, you know, go solo.
Well, you know, you only owe me 3 episodes now, so you're catching up. This is good.
I'm surprised.
One day you might catch up.
I'm surprised when I was in Hawaii, you just didn't have the opportunity just to have, like, a big 3-hour just Stew by himself kind of thing. Because I almost at one point was thinking I could just take the microphone into bed and just kind of be in bed, just, like, random thoughts.
No one wants to get that.
This is kind of where I was
going.
That's
getting weird and creepy and...
For sure.
A little bit rapey as well.
Just kind of like the random asides, too. Like, Dave checking in. It's 2 a.m. This is on my mind. That kind of stuff.
Oh, wow, that sounds
kind boring. Of diary style.
God, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, well.
We'd get like 16 hours of Rome Total Warp, you sitting here just playing it. And just running commentary on you playing a
game.
Not
an exaggeration, kids, that's how long I did play it. And by the way, I am now the Emperor, so, you know.
Yeah. Just in case anyone is losing sleep over that.
Emperor. Well, I know there were listeners out there who were thinking like, yeah, Adam Crouch was asking me questions, and I was like, dude, he had a lot of information about something. I said, dude, that's a lot of info. I'm playing Rome Total War. I'm fucking managing the Empire right now.
Just blowing off fans just so you can...
No. Good stuff from him. Good stuff is always from him. But, like, I was literally giving him a glimpse into my life, which was 15, 16 hours in front of a computer playing Rome Total War.
It is that exciting in real life, everyone.
Back was cramping. You know, I had physical problems. But in the end, there can only be one emperor, Stu. And there was me.
Yeah, Palpatine.
Palpatine. Let the hate flow through you, young Jedi. Now, Stu... this week, in terms of news for the show, Stu this week, he's provided one piece of great news, and then I feel that you kind of rest on your laurels, Stu, if I have to be brutally honest. Like, I would have thought as a comeback kid, you would have felt like some pressure to sort of, like, perform. But you did provide one piece of
here's the thing, I'm batting at 100% here. There's no missed opportunities here.
Well, you know.
I got one item, it's a damn good item.
Jeez. I've got like 20 items.
Yeah, and like some of them are pretty good. Some of them.
That's really okay.
Just to let you know now, I've deleted 3 of them.
Oh, don't delete them, We've barely got any news. Be careful what you delete. Jesus.
I didn't delete any news, don't worry.
Okay. All right, so Avengers. Okay, this is fucking stupid. Found this on Reddit, yeah? It was a Reddit trailer thing of Avengers 4, like a rumored trailer. And a guy broke down the trailer.
Yeah, so running off previous Marvel films, there will be a cut, finished trailer for Avengers right around now.
Okay.
It'll get released to the public in maybe a month.
Oh, sweet.
We're expecting it in the next, like, few, 3-4 weeks maybe.
Okay.
So this is right around the time that we were expecting a couple of leaks to come out.
You'll know the title then, which is heavily rumored to be Annihilation.
Yeah, exactly. That's the new front runner for the title.
What did you say? Did you say Annihilation?
I said assembled, disassembled.
Yeah, wrong. I said Endgame.
Yeah.
And Fallen Sun.
Yeah, both very wrong.
I've got two.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be Fallen Sun.
No, it's never going to be Fallen Sun.
That would be appropriate.
And Endgame they ruled out, like, instantly.
I'm hoping it's Endgame. Just
it's not. It can't be Endgame. They've ruled that out.
They can fucking lie. They've lied before, the Russo brothers and stuff, to throw people off the scene. I think it's going to be Annihilation. It's all pointing that way now, it seems.
Yeah, I still don't know if that's...
But Annihilation needs to have a Nihilus.
Well, that's what I would have thought.
Yeah.
I mean, potentially they're introducing a new villain. I mean...
What is a Nihilus, dude? He's a creature or a species that lives in the negative zone. Isn't that right? Like in Fantastic Four?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Is he actually a one creature or just a swarm of them? I've seen it like as a swarm.
There's like a hive mind, but he's one being.
Yeah, that would...
And he's kind of bionic, kind of like an android-y, kind of... He's okay. Augmented his own body with tech.
I wonder if they'd save that for Fantastic Four. Like, why would that
be? I mean, this would be the coolest introduction of a Fantastic Four ever.
Yeah, true.
You put Annihilus as the main villain and then...
Yeah, and you bring in the Fantastic
Four. You bring in, like, a little snippet of Reed as a post-credit stinger.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. We've got this trailer description, which I'm going to read out, Stu, that you so, you know, wisely managed to find. Were you on Reddit? This is where you found it?
No, I read a report that someone else had found it.
Okay.
And look, I want to preface this by saying,
what?
This is probably going to be fake.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's Reddit rumours, kind of.
It's heavily rumoured, but the timing lined up, and there's a couple of details in here that do fit with what we know.
All right, well, I'll kick it off. I haven't properly read through it all. The trailer starts off showing the damaged Infinity Gauntlet in a field on the farm planet that we saw at the end.
Thanos' planet.
Yeah. As the camera focuses in on the gauntlet, we hear Tony's voice, "We were destined to lose." Epic music score starts. The Quinjet is showing landing in a Wakandan wasteland as we hear Steve Rogers say, "We have come so far." Tony and Nebula step off the jet as the remaining Avengers approach. Steve has a look of relief and says, "Tony." Tony, seemingly defeated, shakes his head and gives a friendly smirk back to Captain America. Marvel Studios logo appears. We get a glimpse of the Battle of New York from 2012 Avengers. Wow, 2012, man. Is that when it was?
Yeah, the first Avengers.
Really? Seriously? God, that's flown by, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Fuck. I wasn't even 40, man. Seriously. That's annoying.
You weren't even 40.
I wasn't even 40. Loki is showing, looking shocked and baffled as he is on the top of Stark Tower. There is a flash of blue light as the camera pans back, cuts to black. Next, we see the Wakanda in the throne with M'Baku at the helm. I was like, fuck no.
That's got to be the worst pronunciation ever. M'Kow thing?
He's surrounded by his new Kingsguard, a mix of the Hill Tribe and Dora someone.
Milaje.
Okay, Shuri and... I know who that is. Shuri.
I was going to say Banner. Well done.
Are seen working on a new project in the lab. Black Widow in full gear is in Hawkeye's family home from Age of Ultron. Basically, everything's thrown all over the place and broken. Nat is studying some type of map with multiple photos and locations on it. This is a very long trailer. A quick shot of Thanos is shown with a long sword, walking down an alleyway in New York City. The next shot is a dark hooded figure with glowing eyes, aiming a bow and arrow before shooting towards the camera.
Ronan.
Right, yeah. One, two visuals of the Quantum Realm. Scott Lang, no suit, is shown running through a park dodging explosions. Shot of space. Thor and Valkyrie are aboard a Kree ship. Thor says, "If the stories are true, you're our universe's last hope, if such a thing even exists anymore." Does he mean hope?
Sorry?
When he's saying, if such a thing even exists anymore, does he mean the concept of hope?
Yes.
Okay. Sort of getting a bit metaphysical there. The next shot is an older, determined Tony Stark walking through the new S.H.I.E.L.D. HQ. He's in full S.H.I.E.L.D. attire and carrying an orange briefcase. Banner wearing spandex, which I hope isn't happening. I've already gone on record as saying how much I hate that whole suit.
It's been in promotional gear from, like, day one.
I hate it. Banner wearing spandex is seen running from something, looking terrified. The next shot is Ant-Man appearing out of a flash of light and landing in a desolate place. We see it from his point of view from inside the helmet. He looks left to right and to his left again and says, "What in the..." Camera focuses on Voromir and his stars. Next, a shot of Rocket and Nebula modifying some new weapons in the lab. Rocket says, "When can we try this bad boy out?" They both smile at each other and fist bump. There is no way this is all in one trailer.
What do you mean? This is like 15 seconds so far.
Okay. We get a glimpse of Iron Man in his
gold... I don't know why you're reading it all.
Red
like
and
a
gold
labored...
nanotech armor. Hulk falls from the sky and lands in front of him. Thanos in full armor smiles. Hulk smiles back. The next shot is in Japan. War Machine, Nat, and Steve in their full Avengers gear are surrounded by the Yakuza. Hawkeye, Ronan, walks through everybody from behind them and approaches the Avengers. There's an intense exchange of looks between Clint and Natasha. Next shot is at the Sanctum. Wong is communicating with Doctor Strange's soul via portal. Cuts to black. Grey-haired Tony Stark and Ant-Man are in a post-apocalyptic New York City. The screen flashes back and forth multiple times through multiple scenes. We see Captain Marvel floating with her fists on fire and her eyes light up. Thanos is in the Soul Stone with young Gamora screaming at him. Loki and Thor fighting off Chitauri together. And Tony handing Steve a brand new shield in the Wakandan throne room. Cuts to Tony and Scott. Tony opens the orange briefcase and as Scott hands him an illuminated bracelet. Tony asks, how? Is this even possible? Iron Man and Ant-Man are shown travelling through the quantum realm. Tony and Scott are back in the Battle of New York of 2012. The final shot before the title reveal is an Infinity Stone disappearing from Thanos' damaged gauntlet. He abruptly gets up and puts on his armour. His face goes from extremely infuriated to a menacing smile. Title reveal. Avengers Annihilation. Stinger. The Hulk is training at the new S.H.I.E.L.D. facility with Black Widow and Steve. Steve notices that Hulk has been training non-stop as of late and asks why. Hulk responds in Banner's normal voice with, my rematch is coming real soon. I can feel it. Okay, so that's it. So what do we think, Stu? Like, do you think this is all bullshit?
I think bits of it will probably be bullshit.
I mean, it's quite detailed, like... But I guess whoever's writing this, if they're trying to get Reddit upvotes, is just like, okay, we can throw crazy shit in from all over the place. Like,
well, I mean, put it this way. I think the length of it feels about right.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, I mean, you got to, when you describe it, you're painting a picture, but really...
Remembering that, like, that first Avengers Infinity War trailer that we got.
Yep.
When you wrote a plot synopsis, like a synopsis of that trailer.
Sure.
It was around this length. Yep. So I think that's plausible. We know some of the details that have come before, like Banner makes the expanding suit that he can wear.
Right. The Hulk one. Iron Buster thing, whatever it was. Hulk Buster. Wasn't he? That was what he was wearing? Yeah, Banner did. He wore it.
No, I'm talking about like the spandex suit. What do you...
Oh, I thought you meant like
expanding
the Hulk
suit that he can wear as the Hulk.
I hate it. Like, yeah, well, what's wrong with the fucking, like, purple trousers?
It's been done.
Yeah, and it's great, and it's classic. No one likes this man. I've heard so many people have feedback saying they hate Hulk in a suit. Like, I've had quite a few people actually saying that as well.
Yeah, well...
Do you love it?
I really don't care that much. It's...
What do you mean? Do you prefer Hulk in this weird suit or Hulk in the fucking pants? I know
I
what
just
I prefer.
Want Hulk in the movie.
I want Hulk too.
Like, the last movie, Infinity War, we barely got any Hulk.
Yeah.
I'm happy just to see Hulk back.
Surely we'll get a lot of Hulk to make up for that as well, I would think.
Probably, but remember we've got a cast of like 50.
Yeah, but you'll have a couple of big moments, I would say.
You'd hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
The team-ups make sense. A lot of these pairings and team-ups make a lot of sense.
There is a logical sense to this description. Like,
The way they're describing, like, Ronan's showing up.
Why is this such a big deal? Why does it matter if Hawkeye is dressed as Ronan or dressed as Hawkeye?
It doesn't. It's the same as, why do we care if Hulk's wearing spandex or purple trousers? We don't. Why would... We're just glad he's in the movie.
Yeah, I'm semi-glad. Like, I didn't miss Hawkeye at all. I mean, I get that Ronan's, like, an interesting version of Hawkeye, but it feels like it's such a crowded movie. Do we need too much Ronan? Like, what can Ronan really do?
Well, remember that this is meant to be the farewell to this iteration of the MCU.
Sure.
Like, post this movie, massive changes. We're getting a lot of characters that never come back, or characters like Tony that are going to shift their roles dramatically.
Sure.
And chances are not have another solo film, but show up as like the director of
S.H.I.E.L.D. Do you think Hawkeye gets his head ripped off
in this? I mean, I think there's going to be a couple of deaths. So there's going to be a couple of big deaths.
Okay, yeah, well, fair enough.
So this is kind of the big farewell, and I think it's good that everybody gets a scene or two.
And I think it is interesting, Hawkeye's running. I just wonder if it's going to happen. I just thought there was a fair bit of it in this trailer. I was surprised that they would focus on
him. Well, they didn't. There's like two or three shots.
Yeah, okay.
If you go back and read it, there's a lot more Scott Ant-Man in this.
Mm. Yeah, but Ant-Man's got a viable, like, you know, movie franchise going.
Well, yeah, and he's actually going to be a much bigger character in this film.
I don't mind.
We know that already, and I like the way that they're going to jump through time, pick up the Infinity Gems before Thanos can get his hands on them.
Okay.
I really like that idea that they kind of disappear from his gauntlet in his...
That's cool.
In his timeline.
Yeah, and that allows playing with time travel. It actually sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
So basically...
So it sounds like they're also going backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Because the post-apocalyptic NYC is going to be cool.
Oh, it'd be awesome. I think it could be great.
Yeah.
Like, remember, I mean, I didn't love the actual series. Remember Age of Ultron, how Age of Ultron just kicks off and the Avengers have already all lost? Like, it's a cold open.
Yeah.
I love this start. Not talking about the movie, I'm talking about the comic series.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the start of that series, how it started like that. I thought that was awesome. And it was really rare to see, like, that in a normal event. Like, it was like, they've lost.
Well, I mean, that's where they're starting from here.
Yeah.
That's what this trailer is really trying to push through. Like, sure. The Avengers have just lost the last
movie. So do you think someone's actually gotten a hold of the trailer at Disney, or do you think someone's just written their best guess? You have to guess.
For me, this sounds like someone that has seen the trailer, has told their friends about it, and it's kind of gone through a couple of hands.
Chinese Whispers kind of.
And we've got the Chinese Whispers end result, which is something that might resemble bits, but
sure.
I think a lot of it's going to be embellished or...
And you're thinking we could have it as soon as within a month or two. That would be awesome.
Yeah, we're expecting it within a month, certainly before the end of this year.
Is the movie May next year? Am I right? Okay, so all right, fair enough.
So you generally expect the first trailer of a Marvel film 6 months before?
Sure.
Which would put it late November.
Man, awesome. Yeah.
Wow. But, you know, they're talking that this movie might be a couple of weeks early.
Okay.
Potentially even end of April instead of beginning of May.
Okay.
Just because they're ahead on schedule, they've done...
It's good, it's counting down, isn't it, man?
Now, it's really getting close.
It's getting close. And is Captain Marvel out before this?
Yeah, Captain Marvel's out in a few months' time.
Great, I can't wait for Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would make sense of why she's in this, because she will have already had a full movie and have set up as well.
Yeah, she gets her full origin, she gets...
I really am looking for
presumably it'll do something very similar to Ant-Man, where it links back into the MCU in the last
bit.
Couple of scenes, or the post-credits even.
Yeah, I think that could be an essential movie, if you're following the cinematic universe.
Oh, absolutely. At this point, I think... Once people saw Infinity War, if you loved that movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp and then Captain Marvel are pretty much essential viewing to go into.
Sure.
Well,
Ant-Man and the Wasp has got that ending. That ending.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, which kind of explains how they're going to do all this time travel-y stuff.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you for bringing that news item, Stu. I mean,
the other thing that I thought was really interesting was Doctor Strange communicating with Wong through a portal.
Yeah, was that like his soul?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his soul, the running theory is that when the snap happened and all these people evaporated or crumbled.
Disintegrated, yeah.
Their souls were captured inside the Soul Stone.
Okay. And Doctor Strange with his magic could...
And Doctor Strange, having a soul, is able to communicate with Wong, which is why he kind of bartered for his life to be taken instead of Tony's.
Definitely. Yeah, Doctor Strange is a player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to have a role here.
So at this point, he's still an active player, and he can still, like, tell these guys we're alive, we're in the Soul Gem, this is how you can get us out.
I can tell you what, he's a total character that went from me having literal zero interest in him to sort of, as the cinematic universe has kicked up and I've kind of explored a little bit more, I actually find him quite interesting now.
There's quite a few characters in both camps, Marvel and DC, where when you read the synopsis of the character, they can sound dorky and boring and... Yeah. Weird and not
Doctor Strange feels like such a blank canvas. Like so many good writers swear by Doctor Strange and try to get on him.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think you can do so much with him, but then he's also weirdly limiting in that he has so unlimited power kind of thing. Like,
well, yeah, that's what a lot of writers kind of... They seek to make a limit to the power very early on.
Yeah.
Or at least a consequence.
Which,
like when we read Way of the Weird, Jason Aaron's
run. Which I loved.
There was a consequence to having unlimited power.
Yeah, that was great.
Like, it was a physical toll on
I really want to read that Roger Stern, Doctor Strange. I think it's Doctor Strange and I think Doctor Doom going to hell and stuff. Apparently, I really want to read it. Like, Roger Stern, one of my favourite writers. Like, a lot of good writers have done good Doctor Strange runs.
Yeah.
You know, or little mini-series and stuff. He's just he's certainly become a lot more interesting.
The last thing with this trailer breakdown, before we move on, was if it's going to be called... Avengers Annihilation.
Sure.
There is zero mention in here of anything Annihilus related.
Totally, yeah.
So...
It feels like a waste of a title.
Yeah, I'm almost on the same...
Is the Annihilation event, which I never read, I assume you have, that cosmic event, was that related to Annihilus? in the comics?
Yes.
Okay. It just feels like it's a bit of a waste because they're going to, if they're doing Fantastic Four, which we know they are, you know, Annihilus is going to come up at a certain point.
Yeah, I think it's going to be down the list quite a way.
Yeah, I think.
Like, you'd run with someone like Galactus and Doom as your big two villains first.
They haven't done. Did they do? Have they done Silver Surfer in this Marvel Cinematic Universe?
No, they can't. It's connected to Fantastic Four.
Yeah, okay. So they can do it now, though.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be comic book accurate, it would have been in Thor Ragnarok.
I was just thinking, in Thor Ragnarok, was there any clue of it?
No, they never mentioned it.
It was a Beta Ray Bill, wasn't it?
It was a Beta Ray Bill. Yeah, there were a couple of Easter eggs for Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah, because I'm thinking in the Planet Hulk, it's Silver Surfer in the comics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. How he kind of gets off the planet.
That's wicked. I loved when we did Planet Hulk. I loved that story. Yeah. It was actually one of my favourite. I still think of it like one of my favourite. It makes me think that there are some really good Hulk stories out there because that one blew me away a bit, you know?
To be honest, in from what I've read, it's head and shoulders above the rest of Hulk's run.
Well, Peter David did some good Hulk, I know.
There's some other good Hulk.
I've read Future Imperfect. It's very good by Peter David.
There is some other good Hulk runs. Like, don't get me wrong, but this story in particular stands out.
Oh, it's great.
Easily for me.
Greg Pak, he's a good writer. Yeah. I love that scene where Hulk showed his wife Banner very briefly. It's the one appearance of Banner in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool. Like, just there's a lot to like in that series, I thought, you know? So, anyway, now, Stu, some news that I'm really looking forward to, and I know you are, Daredevil's show is kicking off this week and probably will be on Netflix by the time that we post this show.
Definitely. I think it was released maybe 4 minutes ago in Australia.
Seriously?
Yeah.
You're plugged in, aren't you, man?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. We're
ready to go. I'm waiting for the show to be over so I can binge watch it.
Jesus. Well, you're going to have to take your time. But like,
I'm tempted to put it on in the background right now.
No. Just
sneakily watch it while you're talking.
I wanted to have the cricket on, but like, I think it's already over.
Yeah, there's really no point watching that.
Yeah, unless you want to really depress yourself while I'm starting cricket right now.
Yeah.
Daredevil
Season 3, we've had a bunch of trailers. The early reviews are out and they're great.
I can't wait.
Everything's looking really good for this season.
Oh, sweet. And I've stayed away from more spoilers. I really am excited to watch it.
It's bringing back Kingpin, who's so good, by Vincent D'Onofrio.
He's an amazing character. An amazing actor, and he is an amazing portrayal as Kingpin.
Yes.
He dominates that trailer.
It's the perfect Kingpin, though.
I've got a question for you. That pseudo... Now, I did a sort of discussion piece on the trailers last week on my show, and that pseudo Daredevil you mentioned is Bullseye.
Yeah.
Now, I forget, has Bullseye been in the Daredevil show?
No, this is our first.
Oh, so he wasn't in like the scenes with Elektra and stuff. Like, I was trying to remember. Oh, sorry, okay, so, all right.
No, we've had plenty of Hand members and Yakuza and that kind of.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought, but I just couldn't remember. Now, I think Bullseye could be extremely interesting. I've always found him a very compelling villain.
He's always been almost the opposite to a Daredevil. Like, he's been right up there with Daredevil.
Oh, there's a lot of good Bullseye versus Daredevil, and also Punisher. He has some good clashes.
Bullseye's such an interesting character.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's run through the Thunderbolts was really good.
Yeah, so...
Where he kind of led that team of...
I'd be interested in reading that at some point.
Reformed villains.
That Kurt Busiek Thunderbolts?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind having a look at that. I had a look at a couple of issues of that recently, Stu.
Yeah.
Because you gave me some issues, and I kind of picked them up and clicked through them, the first couple.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's
really very fun. 90s, but in a good way.
It is very 90s.
But it's the 90s I like as opposed to the 90s I don't like. I thought it was, there was something there, you know?
Yeah.
It's very highly regarded, too. Kurt Busiek kind of, like, was one of his calling cards.
Yeah.
Prior to his Conan run and stuff and his Avengers. No, so, yeah, okay, sweet. So I think Bullseye, and they're doing Born Again. Yeah?
Yeah, or...
Kind of inspired by Born Again.
Inspired by... I think there's two or three comics they've mentioned, but Born Again is constantly up there.
I want to go on record as saying, like, back in the 80s when I started reading comics, I thought Daredevil, because I was a Punisher fan, was a complete chump. But I did actually read a bit of him, and I kind of had an appreciation, but it was that kind of appreciation, the grudge match style, because he often fought Punisher. Then going into more recent times, to just before we did the show, I sat down and read pretty much back-to-back... because I always loved Frank Miller, and everyone was saying, the guys on Paper Keg, my friends over there, Dale and Matt and stuff, said, you know, check out Born Again. They did it on the show.
Yeah.
Read it, Stu. Completely blew me away. It's in my top 10, you know, comics stories. Seriously, it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the first...
It's amazing.
I'd say it was one of the first dozen trades that I ever bought.
David Mazzucchelli on art, Frank Miller on writing, and they are both cooking with serious gas.
Well, I mean, I've got some good news. We're doing it next week. That's our trade of the show for next week.
That's what I was leading up to, yeah. Now, thinking about it, like Daredevil, much like Doctor Strange, is renowned for having good writers doing great runs. I'm thinking Frank Miller, Bendis, Brubaker, Mark Waid. You know, a lot of people have done good runs on Daredevil over the years, and I was thinking at some point down the track, we'll probably kick off with maybe some Bendis Daredevil. Because I have not read a lot of it. I've read all of Brubaker's, and it's amazing, but it follows directly after. Bendis leaves Daredevil at the end of his series in prison, and Brubaker picks it up with him in prison.
Yeah.
So it's literally a handoff. It's really cool how they did it. He put him in the war. He did the opposite of, like, there are no consequences. I'm going to give him back to you nice and fresh and clean.
Yeah.
He put him in prison, and then he said to Ed Brubaker, who's a friend, like, go from here, you know? But I've always wanted to read Bendis because that's kind of where Bendis built a lot of his reputation. That's even, he was writing Daredevil before he got Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean,
like, they're almost
Daredevil's cool. Always been a great book for that.
Yeah.
It's a writer that's proven that they're good enough to handle what is a major title.
Yeah.
But this is a stepping stone to get a massive title.
Do you remember when we read Frank Miller's Daredevil? You could see the sheer growth in him as both an artist and a writer, like, over the course of, like, 5 or 6 issues. It was amazing. Like, you actually saw Frank Miller become Frank Miller. Mm. It was, when you start reading, you're like, this is kind of B stuff. And then you're like, wow, this has really gotten good all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, the end of that first Ultimate collection, he's really kicking.
But like, I found a lot of Daredevil stories actually do that.
Yeah.
Because it's not, the action's good.
Mm. It's a character piece, though, as well.
But it's more character-driven with Daredevil, all the really good Daredevil stories.
Yeah, the good Daredevil.
Takes you 3 or 4 issues to build up some of this tension, and then by the time these artists and writers get going, it's an amazing story.
It's very much like a good noir movie or something. A lot of it's mood and atmosphere and character as much as the action itself. Like,
you watch the first half hour of a noir film, you're going to be bored.
Well, often, you know, often. But then it soaks you in.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that often ends awesomely. I definitely. And I just want to mention as well, on Comixology right now, there's a massive Daredevil sale, obviously due to the show.
Yep. So this is a great
including actually Born Again. Stu is
and look, it's a great time to pick up some of these bits to fill in your collection if you've got some.
I'd also recommend Daredevil Yellow by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. Very different piece to Born Again. I read it directly after Born Again.
Yeah, that's going to be a weird,
complete. It's jarring, almost like going from hard coffee to sort of more like a tea. But both are excellent. It's actually excellent. Yellow, Daredevil Yellow, is out of those color tone ones they did. It's one of the best ones, I think. I put it right behind Spider-Man Blue. I love
Daredevil. Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be second to Spider-Man Blue.
Yeah, but it's good though.
Hulk Gray was good as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's good.
That whole color series is pretty solid.
Yeah, Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale don't really miss, do they?
No.
Now, Stu, the Watchmen TV. Oh, I've got some. Sorry, I was skipping ahead there for a second. I got a little excited. I've got a bit of news coming up featuring a joke that I made, which I'm actually looking forward to detailing on the show. But now, Stu, turning to something that we've been paying attention to: Venom box office tracking. Now, this was interesting.
I'm just about ready to collect that.
You are. What do we bet? Wasn't a captain's call. You should have made a captain's call because you are going to get a collect. Now,
yeah, we didn't bet anything, I don't think. It's just a gentleman's handshake agreement. It was. But we said over under 400 mil. That was the benchmark.
It was all on gut. That was before even any reviews came out.
Yeah, it was a good week.
And both of us convinced ourselves after we saw it even beforehand that it was going to do under because the reviews had come out before we saw it, remember?
Oh, massively, yeah.
Now, it took an estimated, in the States, $35.7 million, only dropped 55%, which was a surprise. They thought it'd drop a lot more. It held off Star Is Born, which has had great reviews. Sony have a genuine hit on their hands with this. It's taken, by the end of Wednesday, in the States, it's taken $150 million there and $236 million foreign. It's only just under the $400. It's going to crack that.
Yeah, it's a $387 million.
This could do $500 to $600 easily. Probably, I could see this as a $600 million picture at the end. It's a major success for Sony.
I can't see it holding out A Star Is Born for the second week.
Well, it's done it for 2 weeks in a row. It opened against Star Is Born, and then at the second
Star Is Born came out a week later, didn't it?
No, same week. That was the whole
same week in the States, not here.
I'm not talking about here. I'm talking about in the States. Like, in the States, it held out Star Is Born week one and two. It was predicted in week two that it wouldn't because Star Is Born had such good. Star Is Born made good money too. I think we're talking about two pretty different audiences. Like.
Oh, massively different audiences. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, and so, different expectations. But I think now that they've got a lot of hype, that kind of train is rolling. They're going to pick up some viewers now. Yeah. Their drops are going to start decreasing.
They could be looking. I think Star Is Born is going to have long legs.
Massively.
And could have some nominations at the end of it as well. It's a very highly regarded picture.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's Oscar buzz. Yeah.
I'm looking forward. I'm seeing it this weekend with Michelle. I'm really looking forward to it. I love the Kris Kristofferson, Barbara Streisand version of the 70s. And, of course, it was done in the 50s and 30s. Like, it's a classic motif. I would recommend, if you go and watch the new Star Is Born and then check out the 70s one, too, because it's very good with Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand. Bradley Cooper directs it as well, Star Is Born, which I didn't realise until I read an article, like, yesterday. I think it's his directing debut.
Is this debut?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, he's produced a lot. He's produced a lot of TV shows and movies, but I believe it's his debut as a director. And he's also playing the lead. But anyway, Stu, what do you think this means for the Sony Spider-Verse without Spider-Man? I mean, this is a genuine hit.
Look, it's alive. It hasn't been killed off movie one like we were predicting.
Well, it's not like The Mummy. Which, you know...
No, which destroyed that universe.
Bad reviews haven't mattered. I do think, though, that they need to think, okay, we made money, but they've got to have a look at those reviews. Because the problem is, yes, a movie can... Like, I've thought about this a lot, like, and I've seen a lot in comic book movies. You can survive bad reviews, but where it often kills you is on the next movie. Do you know what I mean? I've seen it on the Spider-Man franchise before. It's happened on the X-Men franchise, like... Like, even though the movie makes money, the negative kind of buzz on it... Although, I will say this, Venom, with the money it's made, you've heard a lot of that negative buzz has kind of gone away. Maybe it's not the most critical audience, but it's kind of dissipated.
Well, I mean, the critics come out
swinging
week one, leave their reviews, and there's not much they can do.
From that
point on,
if
you come into the table, you're coming up very late.
So, you remember I did the two sort of like... case studies. I had one where it was Wolverine Origins, which opened big, got killed by bad reviews, and Suicide Squad, which opened big and just was resistant. It seems like Venom is following the latter, Suicide Squad, which did around, I believe, 600 to 700 in the end. I think Venom could wind up around there. Cheaper movie to make as well. Like, so it's like, I don't think Sony haven't honestly convinced me basing on what I saw, but I think if I'm a shareholder, I'm happy. You know?
Yeah, look, for me, the animated movie that's coming out, The Into the Spider-Verse, that's their big hit.
If they
can properly market that film and get it to a wide audience, because animated films have always struggled with adult audiences.
Sure.
They do well in kids, they do well in teens.
Sure.
But adults tend to have this weird aversion to a lot of animated films.
Yeah, I mean, the Pixar movies do well, but a lot of that's kids.
Oh, that is kids.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of adults that rush to see Pixar if they don't have kids. Not at the cinemas.
No, I agree. I totally agree, yeah.
And it's not because the quality of the movie's down. It's just a weird kind of conceptual... But
they make money. They make serious money.
Oh, they do. Absolutely, they do.
But do you think Spider-Verse... Well, I mean, I'm going to go see it in the cinema. I'm looking really forward to it.
Yeah,
like,
so am I.
It's interesting, though. That's an interesting point. Well, what will Spider-Verse
That, for me, is their biggest win.
Is it getting a proper release, not like a limited release? Like, it's getting
I'm aware of, it's getting a wide release.
Okay, cool. Well, I think it's going to be a better movie than Venom, frankly, which I don't think was that hard.
Pretty easily, yeah.
I mean, I've had friends, some of Michelle's cousins, who loved Venom. I thought it was really a lot. I've actually said a few times, look, it is fun. Like, I just thought it lacked what I go for these movies. Like, I thought it was lacking something. Is it fun? Yeah. I just thought, like, that's kind of all it was, and, you know, I've already sort of forgotten it, if you know what I mean. None of it stuck with me.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't find it that fun.
You were more down on it than me, for sure.
Yeah.
But I naturally get a bit more excited than you by these things, I find. You know.
Let's not
be a Justice League.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly more excited on things like, I mean, Ant-Man, you didn't see in the cinemas.
No.
You completely ignored that.
Sometimes the old me, who just doesn't rate Ant-Man at all, comes out. And Michelle's the same. Michelle was like, do we really have to see that one? And I was like, no, not really. We can catch it.
Even though it's got Michelle Pfeiffer in it, who...
I watched her in The Family the other night. She's still beautiful.
Odd fascination for.
Odd fascination for? She's stunning, Stu. Michelle Pfeiffer? Are you kidding? Yeah. It's not odd to have a fascination for Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, go back to, like, Scarface. Go check her out in... Batman Returns, Frankie and Johnny. Like, oh, I've seen a million Michelle. She's a true beauty.
See, that's what I mean. You're like drooling into your mic right now.
I'm amazed you didn't drag. Take on one of the great beauties of Western cinema.
Amazed you didn't drag anyone you could to that movie just to see her.
You're close to the mark. It was the only reason I've thought about saying it.
Yeah, I know.
I have so little interest in that fucking Ant-Man. But what? Who does she play again? She plays like the older. Is it?
She plays the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne.
So who's, what's her name playing? Lily, Evangeline Lily. Who's she playing?
She's playing Hope Van Dyne, the daughter.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
This was explained pretty clearly in the first Ant-Man movie.
You don't mean shit. This is the guy who's like, has Bullseye been in so many of us? Has Silver Surfer been in? I forget, like, things. I was like, has Silver Surfer been in it? I'm thinking, I don't remember.
He's been in the Fox movies.
Yeah, he was in one, wasn't he? Rise of the Silver Surfer. Yeah. Terrible film.
Terrible
film. Terrible movie. He looked good, I will say that. The actual look of Silver Surfer in that I thought was pretty awesome. But now, Stu, what's the news here about Bryan Singer? He's, as we know, he's closing on Red Sonja. He came out swinging. There's an Esquire article coming out that he's trying to get ahead of, basically. It's, you know, a continuation on the scandals which have dogged him over the last, you know, really over the last 2 or 3 years. I don't think it's come out yet, but do you think that Bryan Singer will survive? Like, he survived it already, in a way. Like, it's all out there. Like, do you think Bryan Singer will land, like, Red Sonja or another major feature, or is he done as a director in Hollywood?
I don't see Red Sonja as a major feature. I think that's a much smaller feature for one of these studios.
It's a big, like, apparently it's a big budget movie that they're trying
to... No, but see, for me, you'd run Red Sonja with a tiny budget and you'd give it to him, sure.
Yeah, but apparently Legendary are trying to do a big budget Red Sonja feature. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, right? I wouldn't bother with that.
Like paying him big money to get him. You know, maybe.
See, for me, you'd let him do a Red Sonja film, but throw the budget at like 45 mil.
Sure.
Something that's pretty manageable for one of these films.
Yeah.
And look, innocent until proven guilty? That's the system we live in.
Well, I mean, look.
The second they prove something, take him off, remove him,
Bryan Singer
never let him work again.
Dogged by these allegations, but as you say, none of them have even... He's not even been charged with anything, so...
I mean, we had the same thing with one of the Australian greats, Geoffrey Rush. He was hounded by the media for a little while there.
Yeah.
And he's since gone to court and cleared his name of every charge.
Did he win that court case, did he?
Yeah, everyone.
Oh, okay.
He's proven that they were all completely false.
I like Geoffrey Rush. Bryan Singer, I think there's more of an attitude that there's a lot of dirt in that.
Look, quite possibly. But I think it is still innocent until proven guilty.
No, my question is more...
The second they prove anything...
My question
then
is
then absolutely
more,
get rid of him.
Yeah.
You know, wipe his name from the face of the earth. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. I almost don't even care. I was just interested to see that, like, he's definitely angling to make a comeback.
But at the moment, he's a solid director. I think he's had
a lot of hits.
A lot of hits.
Yeah.
Red Sonja could be great for
him. I think Bryan Singer will probably have a diminished career, but will still survive this. Like, he won't.
But that's what I mean. I think from this point on, you wouldn't give him the $150 million.
Mm. He's going to struggle to wind back up doing probably. It'd be a while before he gets back on X-Men movies, for example.
See, I wouldn't give it to him.
Yeah.
And purely for the reason that at any time, allegations could come out again.
Sure.
And if he gets taken off the scene, you're left with a $100 million plus movie.
It's a loaded gun. It's all underage allegations,
Exactly. And all of a sudden, you're down a director that you didn't plan to lose.
And don't forget, he walked off Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting directing credit for that because he spent so much time on it. But Dexter Fletcher, the English actor who's now a director, who finished the movie, doesn't get credit on it, but like he was all writer on it as well. So Bryan Singer is listed as the director of that movie, but he did walk off the project.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean,
and I think that's what the studios are now wary of.
Yeah, yeah. They're gun
shy. He could either walk or they could lose him at any moment with these allegations swirling.
Yeah.
So if you want to keep him on and roll that dice.
I mean, to me, as you say, Red Sonja feels like a lower bet. It feels like the stakes are a lot less.
Red Sonja, if you want to do it well, tiny budget. You don't need much CGI.
I agree. Like, I mean, Red Sonja is basically, for listeners don't know, she pretty much is the female Conan. She's a spin-off of Conan.
Yeah, kind of a Xena-ish warrior barbarian. That's who you're after.
What's the thing... She-Devil in a bikini, I think. It's She-Devil with a sword. That's basically... And she wears the string chainmail bikini. It's basic. Great visual from the 70s and stuff that they created, like Frank Thorne and stuff out of the Conan properties. I'm interested. I mean, I've read a lot of Red Sonja. She's a lot of fun. But, yeah, I think to the mainstream audience, she's an unknown quantity completely.
She's nothing to the mainstream.
Yeah, she's completely... It all comes down to the trailer.
To be honest, I don't... Make it work. Yeah, just barbarian woman,
yeah.
Like, female-led film.
Yeah.
It'll do all right, but... I'd really strip the budget way back.
To me, this is Bryan Singer, probably cleverly, actually, angling for a comeback where the stakes are a bit lower. You know? It's actually probably not a bad project for him to be on at this point in his career. You know? Something a bit more high profile could even attract more heat. Negative heat, is what I'm saying. You know?
Look, personally, I don't think you're going to get away from it. I don't think whatever he does, he's going to get away from this.
Well, the fact that he's coming out there, already putting stuff out there ahead of schedule, knowing exactly. That the article's coming.
Exactly.
Don't forget, it was an article that buried Weinstein, you know? Like, it was, I think, a New York Times article that buried Weinstein.
Yeah, because one of the victims came forward and
basically they researched
had a full interview.
They researched a huge article, like, and it was like a slam dunk, and it ended him completely from the second it came out.
Quite often ends up that way. A single victim, a single person,
sure.
Doesn't have the voice or the reach that the media does.
I will say this, Bryan Singer has already been through the courts a couple of times and they were dismissed. But I think they were probably weaker cases. You'd think if prosecutors were looking at him, they would pick something that's a pretty solid case. But unfortunately, he had a couple of cases where guys were going after him for money and they didn't have...
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, when you're a high-profile name like that...
Yeah.
They're going to go after you just so they can get a settlement and outside of court.
Don't forget, there's questionable, you know, a lot of it's questionable too as to what he's done. You know, like, I dare say where there's smoke, there's fire with Bryan Singer, frankly. There's something there.
Yeah, but I don't know. People have said that about a bunch of people and been right sometimes, wrong other times.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I agree. I tend to agree.
It's a simple equation.
Innocent until proven guilty is, decent.
Like, yeah, but standard. At this point...
Perception is negative.
The risk on him is higher.
Yes, yes. That's it.
Whether
that's
rightly it. Or wrongly, he does have a greater level of risk, so yeah. You don't put him on a giant...
And he walked off Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, which is a negative anyway, regardless of this allegations. He walked out of the movie and they had to fucking get another director and, like, yeah. You know, cause problems and stuff. And that was a movie that had a lot of hype on it.
Yeah, it's same as any director that's had problems, like a Lord and Miller combo.
Exactly.
You're not going to give them a $200 million movie.
Probably not.
Not right now.
Yeah, probably
not. You start them off with something smaller and work their way up.
Yeah, if they can do it. That's fair enough. To me, that's Hollywood, man. Like, you know. Yeah. Now, speaking of Hollywood, Ryan Coogler has signed on officially to write and direct Black Panther.
Yeah, I think this was always going to happen. He was...
Question of cash. Got to a number.
Well, I mean, Ryan Coogler's been just killing it.
Mm,
in definitely. Everything he's done, he's been killing
it. He's in a very strong negotiating position.
Absolutely.
He's killed it with Black Panther. He killed it with Creed. I believe he just did another movie. And is he doing Creed 2? I don't think he's doing Creed 2, but he did another movie with that actor.
I think he might be doing Creed 2.
He definitely did another movie with that actor.
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's done a couple now.
So, yeah, no, Ryan Coogler was in the driving seat here, and I really hope they back the money truck up right for him, because he definitely deserved
it. Well, I think that was all it was a matter of. I think he was just holding out, waiting for the success of Black Panther.
Much like Patty Jenkins did, knowing she had a hit on her hands and the studio wanted her. She held out for a number, and I say rightly so. Like, they get their payday. They probably came in cheaper on the first movie, you know?
Yeah. He's not doing Creed 2, but he's just... He did Fruitvale Station, which was the Michael B. Jordan...
Okay, yeah. I've heard that's got good reviews.
Yeah, really good reviews. And he's got Black Panther 2 announced. Wrong Answer's the other one he's got announced.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean... Honestly, Black Panther was a character I didn't even feel anything about, like, negative or positive, and I loved that movie. You know, it made me love Black Panther, at least in the cinematic universe, you know?
Yeah.
Completely. I thought it was a fantastic movie. Now, Chris Evans walked back his comments on leaving Cap. If you recall, he did the farewell tweets, Stu, like, it's been an incredible 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, I think a lot of people assumed that was his farewell forever.
Well, it did read a bit like that.
It did read a bit like that, but I think a lot of people were jumping to the conclusion of...
Well, we did.
He'll never be there again.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, though. You know, he's coming to the end of his contract. He's definitely spoken before about it. Like, but then I think for the movie's suspense, he walked back saying, I can't confirm or deny if I'm going to be in it again, you know.
Well, what Marvel's setting up is the idea that these characters moving forward...
Mm.
Can still be used in other roles.
Sure.
So think of Captain America's cameo in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay.
Most people don't realize that that was a whole new scene shot with him put in that movie.
Just a joke at the end. Oh, well, it was also in the movie when he was doing the PSAs.
Exactly, on the video screen that Hannibal Buress was showing.
Yeah, and if you recall...
Like, that level of... He can still show up to a bunch of those sort of things or, you know, new posters or ads on TV or...
Have some involvement.
Yeah, it's not... The character still existed. Definitely. So there's still going to be plenty of...
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to kill Captain America.
No, and the other thing is they can kill him in the present, but we've got movies taking place in the past.
Well, I've said this before too. Like, I mean, there's a period piece there. There's action scenes all over the place.
You know, I mean, we've now really opened the door to time travel.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
well, how many Captain America stories take place in World War II? A lot. You know.
Yeah, but I think Marvel are intentionally. Getting away from that.
Yeah. But I'm saying if you want to do a scene or something of him, it's there. The possibility is there, you know.
I think it's more likely that they'll be travelling through the past kind of.
Sure.
And run into him more.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool.
You know, because he has been alive for a long time.
Yeah, he was asleep for a lot of it. But yeah, I agree. No, I agree with you. I will be very interested to see what happens, much like the rest of us, with Chris Evans and Captain America.
We'll put it this way. The other thing they could do, if they ever get round to doing like a Namor kind of film, they could show him in the ice, like underwater.
I heard today on Collider they were anticipating Namor being in the next Black Panther movie because apparently the Wakandans and Namor, there is a history of like, you know...
well, there is, but they don't have the rights to Namor. That's the one character they can't use.
Is it not held by Disney now?
No.
Oh, so that's really held by an independent entity.
Yeah. Namor is literally the only character Marvel can't use.
Oh, I didn't realise they didn't actually own it. I thought that was... Oh, okay. Well,
no, since the Fox deal and since they've got the Sony friendship at the moment going, Namor is the singular Marvel character that they don't have access
they've
to.
They've done very well at reacquiring their assets, I must
they
say.
Have.
You know,
they've really done well, considering they sold so
well,
much.
They had to. They sold
fire
them
sales
to avoid bankruptcy.
Yeah. But they've been slowly accumulating characters like Daredevil and Ghost Rider and those sort of guys back slowly.
Yep.
A lot
of them because the studios just couldn't finance their other movies and, like, you know...
Well, you know, they had a couple of flopped movies and it just lapsed back with the original agreement.
And didn't they do a lot with Daredevil? You know, like, they're already on the TV really kind of showing that you can do that.
Uh-huh.
Punisher as well. Punisher,
Punisher lapsed back to them and they...
No, it's good. And Ghost Rider's definitely back, Stu. Yeah, it is, because he's been
He's been on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So, really, it's just... Well, the name was not going to be... at some point you have to make it. When have they ever done a name or anything? Surely at some point you have to do something with the property.
I don't know. I think it might be one of these weird deals where Marvel just went, well, it's Namor. Who really cares that much?
And no one cared, really.
I mean, it's such a C-list character.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he's been part of the Avengers before.
Marvel's Aquaman, that's it. Like...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they try to make him interesting by making
But until you make him cool by casting a great actor and doing a
what
really
did you
good
think?
Movie.
I'll tell you something I always found interesting. I must admit, Matt Fraction, by bringing Namor a lot more into the mutant fold, because it was revealed Namor was the first mutant, and making more of that in kind of his X-Men stories, I found interesting. That was the first time I found Namor kind of interesting. He was
Well, Namor's not the first mutant.
Well, I know. Apocalypse is,
but
in terms of publication, he is like Namor was the first,
first published.
But. But Marvel made a much bigger deal of that, like in the early 2000s when Matt Fraction was on the title. That's when they started to drum that back up again and sort of bring him into the mutant fold. Like, I found that stuff interesting.
Well, he's done a lot with the Inhumans as well. Like, he tends to pair with a lot of those.
Have you read those stories on Utopia and stuff? That was like it's the Fraction Brubaker era. I found it pretty interesting.
Yeah, and he's used well throughout the X-Men Avengers battle, that crossover.
Yeah. And also used well by Hickman,
the Phoenix Force.
Yeah, by Hickman with the Wakandan versus Atlantis stuff.
Yeah,
if you recall.
And I've always quite enjoyed him being in Fantastic Four. Just because of the whole relationship with him and Sue and Reed's always
on the outer.
It's funny,
isn't it? When you start to think about it, actually, over the years, he has been used well in various bits and pieces. And he's a great, like, side character. Because Sue Storm does fuck him, like, doesn't she? She leaves Reed at one point for him. I believe they do fuck.
Oh, I don't know how far they get. They certainly...
Pretty far from what I've seen.
I know they've kissed on the page.
I don't know if it's in canon, but I think in Civil War she left Reed for him, I think.
Yeah, she's like run away with him a couple of times.
Well, Stu, if you run away with someone,
yeah, but it's Marvel. Yeah, it's on, very man, PG. Like, it's very. They held hands and they smiled.
They held hands and told stories.
Yeah, they just told stories. Sure. And then they woke up very exhausted.
They were just really tired.
They didn't sleep that well.
It was a very physical conversation.
It was a very physical.
Put a lot of their bodies into it. Anyway, yeah. I actually find him kind of interesting. I do hope they eventually get him back because I could see, not really a solo movie, but I could see him being a cool character in antagonist in some of this stuff. Like, definitely a Fantastic Four. I think having Namor in there would make it a bit of fun, you know? Kind of flipping in and out of the storylines, for example. And if you make him a mutant with the X-Men, it's, you know, it kind of would be fun having him, you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of been everywhere.
Yeah, look, it'd be nice to have him, but I think at this point, Marvel's...
Yeah, they've got it all.
I mean, they're just, yeah.
They're in such a great position. They're not lacking, so it's like...
They're not hurting for an Aquaman. Yeah,
they're not paying $500 million to get Namor back.
Yeah, exactly.
More like $5.
Yeah. Although they do get Namorita back with him. That's...
I don't even know who that is. Is that like the female version or something?
Yeah.
Okay. What is it?
Picture like Supergirl to Superman.
Okay, right. Okay. Now, there were rumors, Stu, that were shot down. Josh over at Batman Universe, he now works for the DC streaming service. He does some of the publications and stuff. And he... There was rumors that there was going to be a Superman CW spin-off show with the guy that plays him in Supergirl. He's turned up a few times.
Uh-huh.
But this was shot down sort of almost as soon as it hit the ground. And Josh said inside sources at DC can confirm that there is nothing to this rumor at all. There is not going to be a Superman TV show spin-off on the CW, which I found was interesting.
Yeah, I think that was always going to...
I'll tell you something funny. My dad, okay, not a man known for his comic knowledge... He literally came to me. I was up at his house, at my parents' house on the weekend, and he goes, "What's this about Ruby Rose?" And I go, "What, Dad?" He goes, "She's playing, what is it, Batwoman?" But it was a tone of like puzzlement. But I could, strangely enough, detected some interest there because obviously he must like Ruby Rose. And I go, "She's playing Batwoman." He goes, "I'll tell you what, they are coming up with superheroes that no one's ever heard of." I think he thought, he's like, "Batwoman? Who's that?" And it was like, you could see the question mark over his head. And I was like, it was just, I thought funny to me that like one person in the world, he was kind of like, "Batwoman? Ruby Rose?" Like he's trying to work it out in his head. I go, "Dad, it's a very recent character. It's not like from the 40s, like, you know, you would traditionally." In his mind, I think there's Batman, Superman, and sort of not much else.
I think you found this story riveting, thank Dave.
Oh, well, I mean, I thought it was funny.
Deleted this from the news.
Well, I thought it was funny.
Like, Dave finds a way to throw it in there.
I thought it was funny, man. Like, it's funny when an old guy like him who, you know, to him, like
Dave,
Spider-Man.
You're an old guy.
Yeah, but he's older. Believe you me, if you met my dad. To him,
your dad's older than you? Yeah, really?
A lot older.
I wouldn't have believed that.
A lot older. Well, you know, why did you, that was a human interest story, Stu. You shouldn't delete that kind of stuff. Our listeners like those kind of asides. Now, where are we? Stu, Iron Fist being cancelled. I covered it last week. What is your reaction, man? I couldn't care less. I haven't even watched Iron Fist, so season two. But where are you on it? Like, is this...
I'm a little disappointed,
sure,
to be honest. I think season two was reviewed much better than season one.
Yeah, but there was still like a bit of negative hype, I suppose.
Yeah, it was. It still wasn't a great show, but it was reviewed better. They were on the up. I would have liked to see them do a third season and finish off the story arc.
Yeah.
Because season two ended with a massive cliffhanger.
Oh, really?
Like, they've clearly cancelled it because of the ratings.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the character is still in the next Defenders or whatever they do, a team up, just so we get
an end
to that character arc.
I would hope so. I would think that, like, if maybe a Luke Cage appearance or something.
Yeah. Even if they ran a six-issue shorter season and released that, I would have liked to get a bit of closure, but...
This was the poor stepchild of all the shows. This was always the one that was...
Of all the Netflix, this was easily the worst reviewed.
Definitely.
So I understand why they got rid of it.
You know? Yeah. No, I sort of was wondering what your reaction would be. So slight disappointment, Stu. You're not exactly... There is a petition, Stu, by the way, of course. There's a petition.
There's always a petition.
Jesus Christ.
There's a petition for everything.
I saw the Into the Night guys say, forget about this. What about a petition for the Moon Knight show? And these guys are forever filled with hope. I love them. I said, yeah, agreed, on Twitter. I was like, yeah, come on, let's do it. But I didn't sign any petitions.
Yeah, I was going to
I lent my support. I let my Twitter followers lead into it, you know. let them make their own decisions. I do hope, frankly, that to me, Moon Knight is, in all honesty, I think a show ripe for the Disney streaming service or Netflix.
I guess. Well, I feel like if they're going to replace Iron Fist with another title, another street level hero, Moon Knight's got to be up there.
And think about it with Moon Knight. You can go a bit supernatural, but you can also do the whole, like, he's crazy, you know, the schizophrenia kind of angle as well. Like, there's storylines all over the place with Moon Knight, or you can do more mystical as well, as they have in the comics. I think it'd be very interesting. And, you know, shout out to the Internet guys and the collective. I know they're excited about it. Shout out to Ray. I'm sure he's probably cheering at this moment in the show.
I mean, if they're going to replace it with another Netflix show.
Sure.
Moon Knight works well with pretty much all the characters there.
One thing I will say is it not very likely there will be no... I believe there are no new Netflix shows. It'll all be Disney streaming. So
that's the other thing. They are going to be importing these shows over to the Disney streaming service in time.
Yeah, and they're not going to give them new product.
It seems odd at this point in time they would ever send something over there.
But maybe they'll develop it for the Disney streaming service.
They may do. I don't know how these two things are going to mesh.
Sure.
Like, they may have planned at this stage that Daredevil Season 3 is the final Daredevil season.
Yeah.
They, like, end that character off quite nicely. They
round it off.
In the next season of Luke Cage, next season Jessica Jones is, like, the final. Next season of Punisher is the final.
Yeah, maybe.
They run them to an end and they start something brand new and fresh on Disney.
Or they import everything and then you'll get Daredevil Season 4 in, like, 2 years and Punisher Season 3 and, you know.
Yeah, the problem being that you would have... 3 seasons of Daredevil on Netflix and then 1 season on the other platform.
Well, I think...
And they would have to wait years.
Eventually, it's all reverting eventually.
Eventually, but it's years.
Sure. Okay.
It's not great to have...
No, a split.
Come here and watch season 4. If you want to watch the first 3, though, go to our competitors.
Actually, as a streaming person, I hate it when that happens. It rarely happens, too. Usually, exactly. The whole thing. You know?
So I could imagine them ending those shows and starting something completely fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, I could.
You know, recast them all, start from scratch if you want to use the characters again.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, I doubt they're going to... I doubt we've seen the last of Daredevil, and I doubt we've... I'm sure we'll see more Punisher, you know. But whether... On what platform, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
I guess a lot will depend on the reaction and in these deals. Now, Stu, another thing from last week, which I wanted to get your views on, we had the official announcement last week that James Gunn is signed on for a writer, and everyone's saying most likely director... What do you think, firstly, strategically, very strong move for Warners, I think. But, like, in terms of the story, Stu, do you think he's going to reboot the whole squad and just keep a couple of members? Like,
Well, you have to keep Harley as Margot Robbie.
Do you, though? A lot of people were speculating on Collider today that...
Well, no, but she's already cast in other movies as Harley. You can't...
Oh, obviously, Margot Robbie is Harley, but, I mean, her inclusion in Suicide Squad 2...
Oh, I mean, you could remove her from the team, seems like a really dumb move.
Mm.
She's the biggest hit from the first.
Agreed.
She's carrying a couple of other movies.
Well, she's got Birds of Prey. That's definitely happening. That's locked.
Yeah. Why would you get rid of a guaranteed success?
So say you keep Harley and Will Smith. I think they're definitely keeping Will Smith as well.
Outside I don't know. To me, Will Smith, anyone other than Harley is replaceable.
Oh, I think they'll keep Will Smith, man. I'd be very surprised if they...
Because they don't need a Deadshot.
I agree, he's an extremely boring character, but I think it's Will Smith.
No, it's not boring at all. I thought his character was actually really good.
Do you like him?
Yeah. I just think...
Okay. Well, then why would you get rid of him then? If you like the character and what's Will Smith? I mean, you know...
Well, you get rid of him to halve your budget.
Yeah, I don't...
You're not paying Will Smith. That's the biggest draw.
Yeah, maybe, but I think they're actually being pretty clever over there. I think for all the negative
James Gunn... will take a team of Suicide Squad, but he'll take the B team.
Sure.
That's what he did with Guardians.
Yeah.
He didn't take the original team of Guardians, the bigger team.
Sure.
He took the B-rate team, which no one talked about, and made that a massive success.
Certainly.
I think he'll do the same with this.
Okay, so do you want to have a captain's call on it? No, Will Smith. I'm more than happy to say that'll be Will Smith. I think you're right, he's going to reform the team, but I think the only reason I question if Harley, I think marketing-wise you need to have her. I just think with Birds of Prey and potentially a Harley Joker movie, could it be overexposed?
No, she's going to be in there.
I think
100% she'll be in there as Margot Robbie.
Okay,
fair enough. I think it'd be smart for them to keep Will Smith as Deadshot.
Sure.
But whether they drop him from this film or not, I don't know. I don't think he's an essential cast.
Okay.
The rest of that cast is instantly forgettable.
I was going to say, I think the rest is completely sort of... I'm not talking about replacing actors. I'm talking about replacing characters. Like, yeah. I'm talking about, like, none of the rest of the characters I felt were demanding on inclusion.
No.
Like, at all.
Rick Flagg was okay. Like, Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg was...
I thought he was okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, but, I think Amanda Waller will definitely be back. I mean, there's...
I hope so, but I want her to get a decent role this time. She was a bit of a terrible version of Amanda Waller in the...
Well, I mean, it was a terrible movie. Original. So, like, it just got worse and worse the longer that movie went, I thought.
Yeah.
No, but another thing I thought was interesting was it really got me thinking, and I stand by this, that I think they lucked onto something with Margot Robbie as Harley, and I think they will... we know they're doing Birds of Prey. We know there's talk. We don't know if it's going to happen, that Joker-Harley movie. I think that's still questionable. We know Birds of Prey is moving forward.
See, for me, I think they lucked onto a character that worked in Harley.
Definitely.
Casting Margot Robbie was always going to be a strong move.
Sure.
She was one of the biggest names in Hollywood coming up. Like, there was Oscar buzz around her for I, Tonya and Wolf of Wall Street. And, yeah. Like, she's got some serious talent behind her, and she's incredibly popular.
And don't forget, and you mesh it with it's one the of their rising as, characters, Harley in DC.
It's the same as James Gunn casting Brad Cooper in Guardians. That was kind of a slam dunk casting move, regardless of who he was playing.
Oh, what's the guy's name?
Bradley Cooper.
Who's playing Rocket Raccoon. Yeah, sorry, yeah, okay.
But you could have cast him as Star-Lord, and that movie still would have worked.
Totally.
Like, Bradley Cooper's just a great actor, and he's hot at the moment, he's doing well. Oh. It's Michael B. Jordan in Ryan Coogler's film. Like,
yeah,
they're casting amazing actors that have done a couple of really well-received films, and they're on the way up.
It was great casting.
There's Oscar buzz around
them. And I will say this, I genuinely believe this, that Harley-Margot Robbie combination could really work well for Warners. I was thinking about it the other day. I'm starting to think Warners are starting to assemble something that could be a strong move over the next few years. I think they're starting to turn the corner here. Like, I think this signing of James Gunn is one of their best moves that they've made.
Yep.
Frankly. Like, I think it was... It's a
No, I totally agree. And I think it's coming at the right time.
Yeah.
Now that Zack Snyder's on the out...
Oh, yeah.
And they've got...
No one's missing Zack Snyder.
And they've got an opportunity to completely reboot the feel of the franchise.
Yep.
James Gunn's the guy to do it.
Definitely.
He can go weird. He can go dark. He's done horror films before. Mm.
Yeah.
I think he can do pretty much anything with this.
I agree. I think he'll probably have a bit of a point to prove as well. Pushed off one project, and I think he's going to hit the ground running. I'm looking forward to it.
No, I don't see that. Disney
But
no one ever said that he couldn't direct a film. No one ever said that he didn't have talent.
Sure, I know this, but like it's been through all the trades.
He hasn't got any points to prove. Like, no one has ever said anything bad about his ability to direct a film.
Oh, the point I'm making, Stu, is it's been relayed throughout the entire last 2 weeks, is that, you know, vengeance is kind of one of those motivators. Like, Spider's a motivator, and I would feel when he gets onto the set of Suicide Squad 2, after what happened to him with Disney, he will feel like, you know, yeah, he's going to make a point of making an exceptionally good movie. I think it's a pretty obvious statement. Like, he got pushed off a movie that he didn't want to get pushed off of. In Guardians.
No, but it was nothing to do with his skill. It was nothing to do with his talent.
Yeah, but it's still pointing
to... And Disney never said anything regarding his ability.
Stu, he got fired off a project against his will. Publicly shamed. I would think he's going to have a point to prove in...
Proving, though, Dave? What is that point?
The point is, like, I can make a great movie.
But no one's ever said anything against that. But you're not proving it.
The world we are in today, when your reputation takes a hit... Like, you do feel like the next project, okay, I'm going to give this 150%. I'm going to silence the doubters. And the doubters are there.
If they got rid of him for an underperforming film,
people writing the trades right now who have written this story 1,000 times. I mean, you know, like...
No, but what you're saying doesn't make any sense.
Well, as I said, it's in Hollywood Reporter, Stu. It's in Variety. It's in all
that he has
things.
A point to prove by making a good film.
A lot of people are saying that, yeah. Like, that he will feel that he has a point to prove. Like, he got fired off a project for whatever reason... And they were like, we think that the reputational hit's going to hurt the movie or whatever it was the reason. He then walks away and comes to his next project major superhero.
That's absolute bullshit. Bullshit. That is people trying to sell newspapers.
Okay. Well, I disagree.
That is you falling 110% of a clickbait again.
No, not at all, Stu. Like, I've listened to people and stuff, but I think that he will feel when he walks onto this project, and it would have been any project... Any director who's had that happen to them publicly, it didn't happen behind closed doors, it was played out in public, in the press.
Yeah, but this is the first time this has happened.
Okay.
This is the first time that this has happened.
What do you mean? The first time a director's been fired off a project? No, it's not.
This is the first time a director has been taken off a major project for something that he did on Twitter 10 years beforehand.
Well, you're being very specific, but many directors have been fired off projects for various misdeeds, you know, across time. So it's happened before. This has happened in the social media generation.
This is someone that made a joke and got fired for it.
Yeah. Sure, I'm supportive of him. You realise this. I'm not saying, like, he has to prove it to me. I'm just saying when that happens to you as a person, you will feel your next project, I'm going to show them. Like, just that's just that attitude. I'm going to show them. But it's a moot point.
Like, he never didn't show them. Well, then,
you know, you're disagreeing with...
Like, you're just saying he's got a point to prove.
Yeah.
There is no point. No one ever made the point against him.
Stu, check out the internet, man. Like, there's plenty of people who came out with their fucking, like, you know, pitchforks against him. Like,
but it's nothing to do with his ability to make a film.
Well,
if he wanted to prove a point right now, what he needs to do is get back on Twitter. That is him making a point, because that's what he was fired for.
Maybe.
That's what caused the problem.
Yeah, but...
If he goes out and gets a billion followers on Twitter, and the first person to a billion followers, that is him making a point to Disney.
Yeah.
That
I disagree.
Is...
I disagree. Disney fire you off a project. Like, your next major studio pitches for their direct rival, okay, they're in the superhero sphere at Warner's, you know,
yeah, but you're not making a point unless you're fired for something to do with a technical ability.
Warner themselves made a point by hiring him. You know, they're making a point. Like, I agree. Whatever he did on Twitter, it was minor stuff. It was bad jokes. Okay, like it was garbage. He got fired for it publicly. Don't forget that it wasn't behind closed doors.
Yeah,
publicly.
But I don't understand.
There was an element of public shaming, Stu. So your next project after that. You know, literally you're working for the direct competitor in the exact genre. I mean, it's sort of like pretty obvious stuff to me. Like, yes, of course you would have a point to prove. Like, he's like, he probably thinking to himself, I want this movie to crush it. I want to open
Yeah, he
big.
Does.
I want to do this. Yeah, I want to do
He wants
numbers.
To show Marvel that they shouldn't have fired him.
That's
but that's
I'm
not
saying.
Making a point.
Well, what is if you're playing with semantics, like, it's the same thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, you are actually proving a point to your direct opposition. It's not like he's doing, like, a chick flick indie drama. Do you know what I mean? A million miles away. He's doing something that's going to open directly against them. So I just think I think Warner's made a very smart selection in bringing James Gunn to this project.
Yeah.
The more I think about it, the more I think it was mishandled by Disney. I really do. And some people will argue like they had no choice. Well, I'm like, eh, you had a choice at the very beginning.
To be quite honest, there is a small part of me that actually wants this movie to fail badly.
Why?
Just so Warners will finally just Why? Fucking give up on this franchise,
That's not
scrap
happen.
It and start again. Properly you, start again.
I hate to say this to you, but like you bring this up every show. That's not going to happen.
No, I know, because James Gunn's going to do well. It's going to be a successful
but, like,
movie.
Wonder Woman 2 is going to make a lot of money. Aquaman will probably make money. Like you sniff, but Wonder Woman 2 made a ton and was very well reviewed.
Wonder Woman 2 hasn't come out yet, Dave.
Well, Wonder Woman 1, sorry, made a ton of money and was very well reviewed. The sequel will do very well.
I think a lot of people view that with rose-coloured glasses. If you go back and look at those original reviews, they're like 7 out of 10s.
Stu, you're talking to someone who thinks it's a good movie, no more. Okay, but I'm talking perception. It made a ton and was loved. Okay, so the sequel will make a ton. It will make a ton. It won't fail. Shazam... I've got in my diary, could. Like, seriously. And Aquaman, the jury's out. But Suicide Squad 2 with James Gunn, I think is one of the most interesting plays. You're taking a sequel to a movie that succeeded financially, that was terrible. Okay? You know he's going to go in, and whatever he's going to do, I think we all agree, he's going to sort of soft reboot it, and he's going to come in with his own take. I think we're going to see a fairly different style movie, and how that will land, I think it's one of the most interesting things that Warner's doing right now. I think it's fascinating. And we've got reports, too, that they've pushed Flash to 2021 as well, primarily because Ezra Miller, who's obviously playing Flash, is Fantastic Beasts 2 stuff. I've taken him away from that, and they're working on the story. And also the people who are directing that...
I mean, that is an excuse. That is a massive excuse.
Okay, but listen to this, Stu.
For starters, Fantastic Beasts... That's done. That's wrapped. It's coming out.
Okay, but look at this.
So Ezra Miller is not working on that.
I understand what you're saying. And I think we all agree that the Flash story they're trying to work on. But the directors who came on to that, the Game Night directors and the writers of Spider-Man Homecoming, they've only been on the project for about 6 months. They haven't been connected for that long to it. So perhaps they want to workshop it a bit more. Like, Flash, I think push it down the road. I think push it right down the road. Get Birds of Prey and get Suicide Squad 2. and get Aquaman and Wonder Woman. I think all these movies could hit. I think Shazam is one that could potentially not hit. But when you look at it, their dance card for the next five or six movies actually reasonably strong. I think they've actually...
It's true, but their strength is now, with the exception of Wonder Woman, a B-rate team.
Well, I wouldn't call James Gunn and Suicide Squad 2 B-rate.
Suicide Squad is absolutely a B-rate title.
Well,
in every sense of the word.
It made a ton, Stu.
Yeah, but it's still a B-rate title.
What do you mean by title?
If you look at what DC have as their A-grade titles,
sure.
Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman,
yeah.
I'd say The Flash is probably up there with them.
Sure. Oh, you mean the characters.
Green Lantern like should be up there.
The IPs.
Those properties is what they should...
Yeah, definitely.
...be bunkering down and making sure those guys are rock solid.
Agreed.
Yet they're running the next, it looks like, 4 years.
Well, what about Harley, though? I mean, Harley, in terms of sales now, is A-list. I'm telling you, man. She's one of their top sellers. Like Harley Quinn. She's a huge character for DC now.
Would you put her up there with Batman, Superman, Green Lantern...
Oh, she
in terms of IP?
In terms of sales, she outsells Green Lantern every month.
In comic books?
Yeah.
Yeah, comic books don't translate to the big screen.
Do I think Harley's bigger in mainstream than Green Lantern? Hell yes. Easily bigger than Green Lantern. Harley is like one of the most recognisable DC icons they have now. Her value as an IP has shot through the roof in the last 10, 15 years. And since Suicide Squad, even more. She's massive. Go to Comic-Con. There's 1,000 Harleys.
Comic-Con is a very specific audience.
No, Stu, I will fight you to death on this. Harley Quinn is a much bigger IP than Green Lantern right now, for sure. Like, has Green Lantern got some awesome stories? Am I looking super forward to Grant Morrison and Green Lantern? Hell yes. But Green Lantern has been in the bin for, like, years. And Harley Quinn is only getting bigger, dude. And with Margot Robbie, I mean, there is no limit. I think she could... I'll say what I said last show. I think she will eventually... supplant the Joker. I really do believe that. And you know why?
Let me tell you why.
Strong female, they can do as an anti-hero, and yet she's crazy. And she's not this flat-out... So she can be the good guy in her stories and still have the crazy. I just think she's got legs and legs and legs. I think in 20 years' time, Harley Quinn will be bigger than the Joker, for sure.
No, disagree.
Well, we'll see. But, I mean, right now, Harley... I mean, I agree with you. Batman, Superman, and obviously Wonder Woman. Yeah, they're the three icons, of course. Like, but Harley Quinn, I think, is hugely on the rise, for sure. And I think we're only going to see that more of that. They're doing the Harley Joker movie, which is down the future. They're doing Birds of Prey, and she's in Suicide Squad. And I could see, I mean, I was sitting to Clyde today. They were talking about, like, what are the chances they'll start doing solo Harley movies? I think they're very strong. And if you look at Birds of Prey, I mean, that's going to be Harley and her buddies, you know? I think Harley is an IP, could well get near the podium. Like, seriously, long term, for sure. And I think, honestly, in terms of Green Lantern, Green Lantern in no way is as big as Harley. No way.
In public perception?
No, yeah. Nowhere near. Yeah. Nowhere, dude, go chat to kids, dude. Harley Quinn is so popular. She's in, like, those young kids versions they do for DC, like the DC girl comics. They have a whole thing. She's in all of those as well. Like, she's
yeah,
right,
but like I said,
whole...
comic sales don't translate to the big screen at all.
But she's in.
They
the
never
shows,
have.
But she's in the shows.
They
as well.
Never
like,
have.
But are you serious that you think Green Lantern is bigger? I agree, he's older. Yeah, of course, he's a linchpin Justice League member. I mean, I like Green Lantern, but he has sunk like a rock.
If you're looking
like
for name recognition, Green Lantern has a bigger name recognition worldwide.
I disagree. I think Harley, I think you'd be surprised. I think a lot of it comes down to like the last 5 to 10 years. I think Harley has gotten, you picked a bad one. Green Lantern has sunk and she's just risen. If you argued like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, yeah, of course. But they're embedded in the cultural DNA completely. But I think Harley has, actually, to be fair, let's throw it open to listeners. Give us your views and chime in on the Facebook page, and I will create a Facebook comment after this show and do like the, you know, the pictures where you can vote and stuff. I seriously do think that like she is so much bigger. I think you're overplaying Green Lantern. He has really sunk like a rock, unfortunately.
In comic book sales, yeah, I agree with you. But in name recognition.
Think of the movie, it just
exactly
bombed.
Think of the movie. Exactly think of the movie.
It bombed.
It doesn't matter though. How many people know that name?
But
how many people worldwide, when you say Green Lantern, go Harley's and have some vague recollection of who that character
but Harley,
is?
But you say that, but Harley's had a hit movie since then.
Not in name. Suicide Squad was a hit. She has not had a named movie.
Stu, it's an argument you're going to lose. I understand your view. I get your point. But there is no way that Harley Quinn is...
No, if you go out there and talk to people, not just kids...
What do you mean?
Not just... That's what I'm trying to say, Dave. Shut the fuck up for 2 seconds here.
You don't need to be rude, but continue.
Well, there's no need to talk over people about Harley. If you go around the planet right now and ask them, do they recognize these two names? They will both get hits. Shut up, Dave. Green Lantern will be a bigger recognized hit around the world because it's had a solo film. It's had Ryan Reynolds attached to it, who's one of the biggest names in Hollywood.
And it bombed. It bombed.
It doesn't matter, though.
Dude, show them an image of Harley and Green Lantern. Harley's going to win every day of the week. I'm telling you.
If you show them a picture, sure. I'm not talking about a picture. I'm talking about name recognition.
We're not going to agree. We're going to have to agree to disagree because I think you're that far wrong on this topic. I think Harley has shot up like an absolute stock, and he's plummeting.
Harley is getting bigger. No one's arguing that point,
but,
Dave.
But I understand, but I'm saying...
Harley is getting bigger. Harley has been getting bigger.
And he's gotten a lot smaller. That's what I'm saying. Like, and we'll agree to disagree. We're on different points of view. That's fine.
You can't get smaller in name recognition. You can't forget about something.
Once
it's there, it's out there.
That's wrong. Dude, Phantom, like Lone Ranger, these were huge properties. But they're nothing now. Like, they're lost to the...
They still have so much name recognition, it's not funny.
But not with, like, the fucking people who are spending money. Like, there's a reason these properties have retired. Like, I'm not saying they're bad properties. I'm talking about... You can certainly die as a cultural icon, for sure. I mean, history's littered with that.
The name recognition is still out there.
Okay, look...
If you put a good movie with both of these people, Green Lantern will have more mass appeal.
I totally disagree. Like, look, we're going to have to agree to disagree. Just the fact that there's not even a Green Lantern movie near production and there's three Harley movies, I think says everything about my point.
Yeah, they cast right. Imagine what had happened if the original Green Lantern movie had done well.
We'd be having a different conversation.
Exactly, like, right.
But it didn't. And that's why I'm saying that a lot of it comes down to the last 5 to 10 years. Like, you can die as a cultural icon, dude. Like,
Green Lantern hasn't died. People still remember it. They remember it as a bad film.
Yeah, but that's not good.
But they still remember it.
That's not good. Of course, I'm not saying it's not remembered, but it's not remembered as widely. You're going up against a property that has exploded. Like, I don't think you realise just how big Harley actually is.
But by that token, you can say Justice League, people are forgetting about Justice League.
Really?
Because the last movie was terrible. Does that mean that no one cares about Justice League?
What will happen? Let me tell you what will happen if they don't reboot that property and get a Justice League movie in cinemas in the next, like, 5 years. Yes, the brand of Justice League will recede. Yes.
We haven't had a solo Batman film in years. Does that mean that Batman's getting less popular?
No, and you know why? Because there's Batman shows still going, and the Batman movies are all hits. And then we had Batman Superman. Like, the property of Batman is... almost resistant to what's going on completely, but Justice League as a brand, for sure. If there's not a Justice League movie in 10 years,
bullshit, Dave, and you know it.
No, it's not at all. That's how brands work. That's
bullshit.
How brands work.
That is, like, absolute bullshit.
It's not. Like, listeners, this is seriously. I know Stuart doesn't think Harley's a very popular character.
No, I'm not saying Harley's not popular.
No, but the question is,
Dave, you never listen, do you? You just rant and rant and rant.
No, I do listen, but I just think you are discounting just how popular she's become. And Green Lantern has not become more popular since his movie at all. In fact, he's receded. There was no Green Lantern at all coming from Warners. Like, nothing. Like, if you don't read comics or anything, there's been one Green Lantern appearance for 5 seconds in Justice League, or 1 second. You saw one Green Lantern very briefly. Remember?
Yeah, I do remember that.
That's it, though. Like, that's all there's been. Like, there's not, like, this huge outcry for Green Lantern. I like Green Lantern. It's nothing against Green Lantern, but I don't think it's a property he's even close to Harley right now.
As if you were to put out a new movie tomorrow with a brand new cast and recast Harley Quinn, recast Green Lantern from scratch,
sure,
new slate,
two solo movies,
no heat on either of them, and just said, do you recognize these names? More people will recognize Green Lantern than they will Harley Quinn.
Maybe, but if you pair that...
More people will recognize Green Lantern than Harley Quinn.
There's no need to disagree. Like, I'm agreeing to disagree with you, but if you pair that with the image, which is what will happen with marketing, Harley will win that argument now. Hands down, is my belief. Now, listeners, okay, we've had our point of view. There's no need for us to keep arguing about it. We're on separate sides. That's fine. Listeners, chime in with what you think, and please, show no favoritism to either side. Give us your honest feedback, and we will read it out next show. I will do a Facebook vote as well. Okay, so we can hear their point of view. There's no need to keep arguing about something. Like, we have different points of view. It's fine. Now, Where am I up to in the fucking news? So we've already covered that Flash has been pushed to this one. Mark Hamill confirmed on Twitter he will be in Star Wars Episode 9.
Yep, he was always going to be in that movie.
I mean,
he confirmed that when he shot 8.
Well, I don't know. He tweeted out the other day, all I can say is I'll be in it. I'm not going to offer anything else. That pretty much was his tweet. So, do you think it's a Force Ghost or a flashback?
I'm leaning towards Force Ghost, but...
Me too. I think so. More reports this week from comicbook.com, who have a lot of reports. If we talk about clickbait, I think these guys are on top of it, as in creating it. The Warner Brothers are reportedly done with Henry Cavill's Superman movie franchise. I researched this, and there seems to be no firm news from any other outlet other than them.
No, this is rumours that have been circulating for a couple of months now.
Exactly.
Ever since he did Mission Impossible and signed on to Witcher.
Who was the person who was... They said was going. Was it Michael B. Jordan who they said was going to be Superman?
Was on the list of actors they could get to play him.
Yeah, like there was. But do you remember there was that heavy rumor?
John Krasinski was top of that list.
Yeah, but you remember when I was in Hawaii that there was that report that came out that Henry Cavill was definitely out and Michael B. Jordan was locked.
Yeah, you sent me that. I didn't put it in the show.
Why? Why though? That broke in mainstream news. You realize that was reported on like mainstream news outlets.
Yeah.
Okay. It's news. Like, if you hit the regular news cycle and you're intruding into actual people's days that aren't following this, that's news. Like, there's usually something behind this kind of news.
We have a fundamental difference on what news is then.
Well, it's not news if it gets reported on, like, CNN and on regular channels, which is what happened. That's not news.
That doesn't make it news.
Well, okay.
News is information, like actual information.
Well, that was information that they were saying had leaked from Warner's. Like, that was literally it. And then you had Henry Cavill doing his Instagram thing.
See, if there's one thing I actually applaud Donald Trump for, it's for getting fake news out there. Mm. That's what that was. It's clickbait that's made the news.
Well, it's also jockeying.
It's a bunch of rumours that have no factual basis. It's not news. It's...
Okay, well,
it's what journalism's kind of devolved into.
I understand your point. It hit the news cycle, though, Stu, is what I'm saying. It was reported, literally, I was going through an airport and it was on the actual news, is what I'm saying. Like, it hit the mainstream news cycle.
See, that for me is just a bad sign for humanity.
Well, I'm just saying it did. Like, but think about it as well. There was some smoke there. Like, Henry Cavill's agent was literally involved. They were negotiating over the Shazam cameo. The fact that he might be out,
that's what we said. That's what I reported on that week. Okay. That is news, the fact that he might be out.
You didn't report on the Michael B. Jordan possible casting?
The fact that he was listed on a list, like...
Well, it was being reported that he had actually signed. That was actually what was reported.
He never signed, no.
I agree, but that was...
And there was no report anywhere that said yes, that was. He had signed.
Yes, there was.
No, that was... people had speculated, people have... But there was no evidence anywhere to suggest that.
Okay, but I'm saying it was reported. It was walked back very quickly. It wasn't reported by Warner's or Variety.
Yeah, but the standards for it was reported, they've been slipping for decades now.
Okay, but do you know the news article that said the whole thing was Hollywood Reporter, which is one of the most trusted sources? Hollywood Reporter and Variety are the two that are as close to it as official confirmation as you'll get. And usually studios will put out their releases in that. Like, that's true.
Yeah, but they will actually say this has been
no, but they'll often won't
confirmed.
They often won't. In talks is the word they'll use. Oh, yeah. Almost locked. Like what I'm saying is they'll often do the unofficial announcement through Variety and Hollywood Reporter. That is why it got such widespread recognition because it was reported in Hollywood Reporter. I'm just explaining. Like it's true. It's not you know.
Yeah, but, the fact that it was reported doesn't mean it's true though. That's the problem that I had. And there's no way I'm just going to come out and just say
okay.
Someone on Twitter said this, therefore true. Which is the seems to be the level of journalism that we're getting now.
Hollywood Reporter was reporting on Henry Cavill being out. Normally, in normal, like, I would say 8 to 8.5 out of 10, that level normally is pretty true. It's a pretty high standard they have. The thing about Michael B. Jordan wasn't reported there. That was the rumour portion.
Yeah, see, that's why I left it out.
Okay, fair enough. But, like, you know, I don't know what to say. Like, I mean... I would put that into the news.
Look, to be honest, if a news site is getting 80 to 85% correct...
That's good.
That is terrible.
Well,
if it's not 100, it's not news.
But you're talking about industry rumours that, like, aren't, like...
See, about this, the only reason it made the show is because it sells papers. The only reason it made it is because that's clickbait. People like hearing about that
stuff. Hollywood Reporter and Variety are fairly respected industry There is well respected as anything in the industry. There are, they
see, that says less for the industry than news. That's what that says.
Well, but when you're reporting this kind of stuff, Stu, like, a lot of it comes down to, like, we do it every week. You could almost use Hollywood Reporter and Variety. They are very much a high standard of what is going to happen, and then they'll have their speculative stuff. But that was reported. That was kind of like, that's a glaring error on Hollywood Reporter. They reported that as it had locked. That's quite uncommon for them at that level. They normally would have checked their sources many times over.
And that's the difference. A lot of these places never have
the standard of news reporting in the entertainment industry. The sort of stuff we cover is appalling.
It's not just entertainment; it's across the board.
Yeah, I agree. It's appalling. Like,
I'd say sport. Sport is the only area where the reporting standards haven't plummeted.
True, and I would say there are some similarities between the way they report the actors, and directors circulating projects to a lot of the trades in sports. You know, baseball players rolling around teams and stuff. It's similar, the kind of reporting that goes on. Like, sports reporters will often get the agents of the players feeding them news, which is what happens, to try to juice the deal, etc. Like, it's one of the oldest tricks in the book. The same thing happens here. Like, you get the agents are often the sources. The agents of the actors are often the sources of the stories.
Yeah, but if you've got a decent news outlet, they're not going to print that as fact.
But they do. Not as fact, but they report it as rumours in talks.
That's fine. If you want to start this out by saying rumoured, go ahead. You can say whatever you want and put rumoured in front of it.
Exactly. But
like, rumoured, cats can now talk.
Yeah, but unfortunately...
Totally fine. I'm pretty sure you can find something on Twitter that says that.
Yeah, unfortunately what happens in the industry we report on is you get, like, your comicbook.coms. They show no level of sort of authenticity or quality.
No, and that gets picked up on by the Hollywood Reporter when it gets enough clicks.
Maybe. They start reporting. I think you're being hard on the Hollywood Reporter and Variety. Variety and Hollywood Reporter are pretty respected news items. Like, a lot of stories break there for a reason, okay? Like, and the
source... Yeah, they've got a large viewership.
Yeah, but, like, you're not going to find someone who... Like, what I'm trying to say is... Outside of, like, the studio
but let's not confuse
something.
Popularity with integrity. I think that's a mistake a lot of people are making these days.
Okay, but, like...
Hollywood Reporter and Variety have one of the biggest readerships around.
Yeah.
They're massively successful publications.
And when they make a major mistake, it's not good for them. It hurts their reputation. Like, they have a standard to uphold. Is it super high? Is it like, no. But, like, it's reasonably high. Like... When Henry Cavill was reported, and he was reported by Hollywood Reporter as leaving Superman franchise, that's why it broke so big, because major news outlets were like, this is for real. This isn't comicbook.com announcing, you know, Superman's walking away. They were seeing it in major industry trade reporting it like as fact. And that then became a problem because it wasn't. And he was still in negotiation. It was a bit of a tool being going over the Shazam cameo. And he still hasn't officially walked. Just like Affleck, there hasn't been an official confirmation either way. Who knows why? But, like, there's not been an official studio announcement.
Well, you know. The reason why is they're trying to figure out the time so they can profit from it.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what it comes down to.
And Matt Reeves' his movies on the...
If they can put out a tweet that confirms that they're leaving, that happens to coincide with the release of another Ben Affleck film, and his name gets thrown around on Twitter and becomes a trending hashtag,
sure,
you get a bunch of people that... stumble into this new movie.
Do you think that...
That's marketing, that's not news.
Okay. Do you think that Henry Cavill will appear again? I think Affleck's gone. I mean, I think that's, as you say, just a question of timing the announcement. But do you think... Henry Cavill was clearly jockeying for a payday on Shazam cameo, which didn't come to be, which is what led to the whole incident. But nothing's been resolved. There's been no announcement, and there's certainly no Superman project in the wings. So do you think you'll see Henry Cavill in any capacity as Superman again?
I mean, we don't have any movies with him
nothing's
in
listening.
The immediate future. We might get a shot or cameo in Wonder Woman. I
don't think we're going to get that after what's happened on Shazam. Like, that was the whole reason that we came to this predicament. Like, that's what led to the entire problem.
Well, yeah, but I feel like he's just pushing for a bunch of cameos because he's not getting a solo film.
Sure.
And if he'd already had one in Wonder Woman, then that would be a reason why they wouldn't give him one in Shazam.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, it's not ruled out, but I can't think of any other DC movies coming up that he would be a fit in.
They wanted him to do a Shazam cameo. And he didn't want to do it. He wanted the solo movie. That was the whole point of contention. They wanted him in Shazam to do a cameo. And he was like, no, I want a solo movie. That was the entire
They're not going to get one then.
Okay. So you think he's cooked? He's done?
I doubt we're going to see him again.
Yeah. Me too. I think just time is against him. He's signed for Witcher. He's got a pretty decent Hollywood career. It feels to me like if you're not going to put him into a movie, even as like a co-star, then it's sort of like the train's leaving the station. The guy's got other things to do. You know, for me, he's been poorly served by scripts. And, you know, I don't think he's been terrible, the Superman, but I think he's been in some pretty mediocre movies and some pretty mediocre scripts. You know, when you think about it, I don't think there's anything really wrong with Henry Cavill. When I watched him Mission Impossible, I wasn't like, this guy sucks. I think he's a pretty solid actor.
Yeah, I can't see him winning any awards anytime soon. He's not terrible, but he's certainly not great.
Okay.
He's very
replaceable, is your point?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, I don't know. I just think that they missed the boat there. I think he was a little bit better than that, but I see.
I don't know. For me, he feels very much kind of like a Seth Rogen. Okay. Like, great at what he does. We'll have a few successful movies.
Right.
We'll make a good career for himself.
Okay.
He's not going to win any Oscars. He's not going to be remembered as one of the all-time greats. He's not going to be. Sure.
I mean, Seth Rogen's the guy who he's now doing Preacher and stuff. He's doing all right for himself. Seth Rogen.
The actor, Pineapple Express. Yeah.
But he's now developing Preacher, The Boys.
Yeah, he's gone on to do a bunch of other stuff because his acting was never that great.
Yeah, I mean,
he's playing it smart.
Comedic. Yeah.
He did his own thing well enough. Yeah, but
I think Seth Rogen, I mean...
And that's what Henry Cavill's going to be remembered as. A guy that does action films pretty well.
Handsome leading man.
Handsome, good-looking guy, but, I mean, Army Hammer kind of...
What more do you need for Superman, though? Like, that is Superman. You say handsome leading man, decent actor. I mean, to me, I get your point, but, like, I wonder if they're going
to
struggle.
See, for me, when you're looking at DC, you need to get three people cast damn well and make sure they are really well done. Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman.
Sure.
If you can get those three cast really well, you're not going to have any
problems. They clearly hit the gold mine with Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot, absolutely.
I thought it was a swing and a miss
with Batman. They tried.
Yeah, yeah,
Affleck has the credibility to lead it.
It just didn't pan out.
Didn't quite work. Henry Cavill looks the part, but he is not that great.
I don't know. I don't think he's that great, but I also thought he's been poorly served by the scripts, though, as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Big factor here. Like, Justice League, you know, I mean, the Return of Superman, it was hard to make that more dull and anticlimactic.
But I mean, look at over the other side of the fence where you've got Robert Downey Jr. holding down.
Sure.
A very well received actor.
Chris Hemsworth, et cetera.
Evans and Hemsworth are both massive names.
Sure.
I don't think either of them are amazing actors.
No, but again, they've got great scripts and great moments to work off, you know, in their movies.
But I feel like both of them are more solid actors than Henry Cavill.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'd put them almost... I mean, Chris Hemsworth... I don't know. To me, all those guys, they're serviceable. Like, they're good at what they do, but they're not great. I would, you know... To me, I don't think there's really any problem with Henry Cavill other than, I think, the actual movies themselves, the direction, the writing, everything like that's been bad. Give me a good Superman movie, I think he could be okay. But, hey, dude... if it's not him, it's going to have to be someone. They can't go without Superman forever. That's the thing. Like, I know you think this whole DC... This is getting back to my original point. I know you think this whole DC universe is going to flame and die, but it's simply not when you look at the schedule.
And I'm so disappointed that it won't, because it needs to.
But what if... Okay. I mean, this is where I question. So I never actively wish for things to fail. Like, to me, you know Wonder Woman 2 won't fail. Like, if Wonder Woman 2... I would put a captain's call... I'd put, you know, 10 captain's calls on. That'll make money.
And of course it's going to make money.
Yeah. Aquaman definitely has an element of risk.
No, that's all. I'm not arguing that it will fail. I'm arguing that I want it to fail.
I just don't understand why.
Really? You don't get it?
No, not really. Like, not if the movies are good, yeah.
If you want to replace one or two characters, you can do that in a universe.
Definitely.
No one blinks an eye.
I think you could.
When you need to replace two-thirds of your main cast, people are going to blink. People are going to have to do a double take of what the fuck did you just do.
But I don't think you need to replace Superman, though, at all. I mean, I think...
Well, I don't think they get a choice. I think he's walking. Yeah, I think they've lost Batman, they've lost Superman. Wonder Woman's their only shining light in that franchise. The rest are...
But then you look at as you say, like, I know you called them the B team, and they are a B team, but Suicide Squad made money, and bringing James Gunn on, I would almost guarantee that that's going to be a good movie. I've got a real feeling that, like, they're going to do something with that, you know?
Yeah, it's very hard to build a universe with that and Wonder Woman, though.
I wonder what the...
Because that's what they're after. They're not after 3 good movies. They're after 15 good movies that are linked. And the gap between those two things is monstrously big.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Anyone can make 3 decent movies.
They've got a lot to prove. I mean, yes.
When you want to make 30, you're asking for a whole different ball.
But you don't think about it in terms of 30, though.
Well, they are. They clearly would like be. Marvel's sitting at 21, and they're going strong.
But much like Billion Inks, you look at the next 5. You build the next 5, then you go to the next 5. Like, you got to take it in chunks. Just like Marvel did with their phases. Like, you've got to have an element of, like...
True, they set something up with the intention of going indefinite.
Sure.
And they set it up in such a way that they went, we can add to this at any time, we can take away a character or two, no problems.
Sure.
We've built a playground with which all our characters can exist and
coexist.
And
that's been a flaw to DC. That has been a flaw.
DC haven't managed to do that so far.
Mm.
And I think if they can continue to build on what they've done, they are going to struggle in the future to do that. Because this sand pit is so... The foundations just aren't there.
One thing I would say, it's so hard to... We have no details.
So the only reason I want it to fail isn't because I don't love Wonder Woman. It's not because I don't want DC to eventually win.
Mm.
It's because I want them to eventually win.
You feel that, like, the ground is a bit shaky.
I want them to do a full X-Men First Class, reboot the lot, start from scratch.
Well, I think you might get that soft reboot. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's X-Men First Class is what I call a soft reboot. I think,
but
you might
at this
get
point,
there.
At right now, I think they're one character away from a hard reboot.
Okay.
So why not go with that hard reboot?
Well, they're never going to recast Gal Gadot, dude. That's not going to happen in any universe. Like, that's the thing. Like, some of it's a reality of business. Like, I get your point. Like, they're recasting Batman. I think we can assume that, and that's probably for the best. Like, a younger Batman, I think, works. Good film director, Matt Reeves, you know, you get a good Batman. Suddenly, if that movie is a success, and nearly every Batman movie has been, then, you know, then you're off running again. I think Affleck, unfortunately, and it's not really just Affleck's fault, but the circumstances around the whole Batman situation, I think, have cursed this a little bit. I think, really, there should have been Batman movies rolling out, like, this year. You know what I mean? Like, with him or without him sort of thing, to keep the train
rolling. At this point, I mean, ideally, DC would have been putting out 3 movies a year.
Yeah.
And just churning through them.
Yeah. But Justice League was such a flop, it meant they had to think, what the fuck are we talking about Cyborg movies for? And Flash movie, kick it down the road, you know? And, like, how many directors have left Flash?
Which was weird for me, because Flash was one of the few characters that actually worked in that
movie.
Yeah,
but they couldn't get a director to stick on the project. So clearly they had, you know, script issues and possibly budget issues and all sorts of issues. Like... I think kicking Flash down the road is probably a good idea. And you can, I was thinking about it today. I was actually thinking about it. I was like, you can get to a place where there's a good Flash movie. It's quite possible. But clearly they're nowhere near that. Like, I mean, you don't get that amount of directors leaving a project. That's not normal.
No, but like, I mean, I've said this so many times before. Flash was their opportunity to reboot and keep Gal Gadot.
Like a sort of Flashpoint.
It gets all of the benefits with no risks.
And
you
that
can keep Harley Quinn, you can keep Gal Gadot, you can keep the 3 characters they've got that actually work.
Pick and choose.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of picking.
Yeah,
you've got 3 to 4 characters that really worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rest, gone, hard reboot.
I agree. Maybe the only reason they didn't... We know that that was on the cards, that there was a Flashpoint movie in production. But maybe they felt, A... it was too drastic, and B, it would hurt their Flash project. You know, I mean, I thought what you think, that, like, they would do that. I thought that was going to happen. I was like, this will be interesting. Maybe they thought that would be too confusing.
You have Flash running up against Reverse Flash, like Eobard Thorne.
You can
have Batman help him build the treadmill.
Yeah, I know. You could have had Jeffrey Dean Morgan be the father, and he was cast, and then it all
They could run through a bunch of different realities and have a fun... run through time.
That said, though, you could have that in the Flash movie. Like, you don't need Flashpoint to have that happening in a Flash movie.
Yeah, the problem is, if you do recast between now and then, and they're going to have to if it's 2021...
Well, like, they're not recasting Miller. Yeah, he's staying.
No, but they're talking 3 or 4 years down the track. They're going to be recasting a bunch of these characters between now and then.
Okay.
At that point, what's the point in soft rebooting if you've already done that.
Well, what level of casting, though? Like, they're not going to cut... They're keeping Ezra Miller. He's attached to Flash.
But they're casting all of the Birds of Prey. They're casting...
But most of the Birds of Prey haven't been cast. Like,
exactly. So why would you cast people now, put them in a movie, only be, when there's a reboot 2 years later?
Oh, I see your point.
Like,
yeah,
you're setting up to fail if that's what you're doing.
If Flashpoint was going to happen, it would have happened like this year or next year.
This is the best time to do it.
Yeah, well, it's
when you've only got a couple of properties that are working.
Well, they killed it when they brought on the new directors. When they brought on the guys from Games Night, that's when they killed the Flashpoint project.
Yeah.
That's when they're developing a Flash, you know, origin movie or solo movie, whatever you want to call it. Not a non-Flashpoint
thing. No, I know. But any other time than now, like, the returns are far less at any other stage.
Yeah, I don't know. The way I think of it is, like, yes, that was an opportunity, and yes, I think it would have been interesting, but they're clearly not going in that direction. I mean, I'm reasonably confident that they'll wind up in a fairly good position. Like, really, I don't think... Maybe they won't make Marvel money, but I think they can make serious money. I mean, if Aquaman hits, much like Venom, dude, if Aquaman hits and is a hit, if it flops, then yes, your doomsday prediction could very well become true.
It won't. It won't.
Well, you never know, Stu. Like,
the like movie it's what I want, it's not what I'm going to get.
Yeah, the movie business is funny, though. It's filled with movies that flop that you don't expect. You know what I'm saying? And movies that hit that you also don't expect. Like, there's an element of unpredictability to box office. Like, I don't think that's true. Will flop.
But we're looking at 3 or 4 movies in a row. That's what we realistically need.
Hmm.
And we're not talking minor failures. We're talking bomb.
Sure.
If that happens, then they will be pushed into drastic measures.
Well,
anything less than that, they're going to say, oh, it's recoverable still, we can keep going, we'll recast, we'll try again.
I think if a disaster happened along the lines of Justice League again, which was a genuine disaster for them financially, I think that would
be... That's the first.
Yeah.
But you need to back that up with another 3, give or take.
I don't know, man. I think you could be singing a different song. I hope you are. If Aquaman is good in hits, and Wonder Woman is good in hits, and I'm giving Shazam a fucking pass, because I have no interest in Shazam whatsoever, but I will see it out of duty to the signal. If those movies all hit, then maybe your attitude to it will improve and change itself. Like, you'll think, well, actually, now they're actually making good movies now, so what am I worried about? Like, that's what I sort of think. Like, we're dealing with fiction here. You know what I mean? Like, look at the X-Men universe. Like, the need for logic at times... It's not as exact as in maths or something. Like, you just have to convince the audience enough kind of thing. It's like a spell. And if they have these hit movies that are good, by the time we get to Birds of Prey, and if it's good, like, you know what I mean? The audience will forgive. And the box office will be up there. And then what's there to worry about? Then Matt Reeves is rolling out his Batman movies, and I'm excited by the thought of those. Matt Reeves' Batman trilogy, I'm genuinely excited.
The problem for me is going from good movie to good universe. That is not as straightforward as people think.
Okay, but, like, I think if you get a collection enough of these movies, I think they're going to be very gun-shy about a Justice League project until they have these movies sort of hitting nicely. You know, I don't think they're going to be in a rush to get back to Justice League until they have some of these properties.
Well, I've already said there are no plans for a future Justice League.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing in the present. That's
everything's, like, it's pushed out beyond 2022.
It's right out there. There's no plans at all.
Exactly.
You know, that are in production. I don't know, man. Like, you have a different attitude towards me. I mean, I'm very much like, I judge on the movie, and if it bombs, it becomes unsustainable at a certain point. That's kind of what I think. And I've charted them out, and I'm like, this won't bomb, this won't bomb, this might. Birds of Prey.
What I'm saying is Superman 1.
Ben of Steel, yeah.
No. The original Superman movie.
Christopher Reeve, yeah.
People love that movie, and it's a fantastic movie.
Gotcha.
Tim Burton's Batman. That was a great movie. People love that movie.
Yeah.
You can't put the two of them in the same universe.
No, they're different.
It's very easy to make 2 or 3 good films.
Mm.
It's very hard to put them together.
But they were never trying to do that then.
But DC now, that's constantly in the back of their mind. They need to link these together.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's not just make some good films.
But Warner's, funnily enough, Warner's have themselves at times gone away from that as well and said they're focusing more on individual
Notice
projects.
How that comes out every time they have a massive flop and nothing else.
I don't know what to believe, Stu. I think a lot of these universe stuff in the early stages is pretty inconsequential. Like, it only matters when you really get a bit deeper into it.
I disagree massively.
Well, dude, look at
it. The deeper you get, the easier it is. The less you need to worry about it once you're in it.
Well, if you look at Phase 1 Marvel, the linkages were relatively minor. They were there. I guess they were there. But they weren't crucial to the story.
Not to the story. But they were very conscious of making sure the tones were the same, the color palettes were the same. the level of language and action and acting was very similar across the board. They set it in the same level of reality.
Yeah.
So you look at, like, Nolan's Batman versus Tim Burton's Batman.
Completely.
Different levels of reality.
Yeah.
I mean,
one's gothic and one's, you know,
completely. One's very gothic, very cartoony almost.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though it's live action.
We watched it on the weekend, actually.
Whereas Nolan's Batman is set in a reality very similar to ours. Yeah. It's meant to be very grounded.
Yeah, quasi-realism that he was going for.
Yeah. So those two films, despite same character, same company, both good films, won't ever gel.
Sure, then they weren't meant to. They weren't meant to, though, yeah.
No. But now, like Marvel's Phase 1, those films weren't linked hugely.
No.
They weren't meant to be. But they were meant to gel later.
Sure.
They put a lot of time and effort into making sure those first five films really gelled.
I see your point. No, I've
and
thought the same.
That is what takes a lot of energy and skill and cooperation with a bunch of directors, a bunch of actors.
But if the movies, I get your point. Of course I get your point. And what you're basically saying is, like, even if... I get your point.
I mean, you don't even need all those movies to be amazing. Hulk is one of the worst Marvel films.
Sure.
It's fine.
It's serviceable at best, yeah.
It's fine. It's not a great film, though.
No.
But it did enough to build that world. We got Thunderbolt Ross out of it. We got a characters or two. Like, they did enough with that film.
And they did enough they could salvage later on. Like, as you say, putting him in Civil War was a neat touch.
Yeah, and by that stage, they'd already figured out Iron Man was a massive success.
They had
number two coming out as the next movie. They were fine.
Yeah, I'd agree. But, I mean...
DC at the moment seems to be very fragmented. They're going, Joker Harley's in this universe. Aquaman's in a separate universe. They're not connected.
Joker Harley... Yeah, it's interesting. Joker
Birds
Harley,
of Prey, who knows which universe that's going to be in or if it's going to be in its own.
Birds of Prey is in... They've said Birds of Prey is in the same universe as Suicide Squad. Like,
well, yeah, exactly. But does that connect to Aquaman? Does that connect to the Harley Joker? No, they've got three different Jokers running around.
Harley Joker, I think, is... Yeah, is totally a mystery. There was at one point Leto was involved with her.
Exactly. You know. There's two or three different Jokers running around.
We know that Joaquin Phoenix is completely
so it's incredibly separate. Fragmented, even if they are of the similar tone. They can't.
Yeah, I don't know. But, like, to me, if I get your point, and I think as well, just sort of wrapping it up, like, I get your point. If, assume Aquaman hits. Assume if it just gives Shazam a pass and say it's a success. And Wonder Woman's a success, and let's even say I think a huge is the Batman, Matt Reeves. No one knows what is happening on those movies. Let's say they all hit, but then as you say, we want to do, okay, we're confident we've had X amount of hits. We've made so much money. Okay, we want everyone together. Let's do a Justice League 2. And as you say, how does your Matt Reeves Batman...
How do you pick a tone for the Justice League? How do you link them together if they haven't already made?
The answer is, again, it comes down to good direction and good writing. It's quite possible. But challenging.
That comes from studio overview. It's not about the individual directors.
Well, you know, yeah, the studio
overview. The skill of an individual director is to take what the studio has told them, you have to play in this sandpit, and then craft a good story within it. That is what makes a great director.
Like, a lot, the freedom can, you know, go up and down that they have, depending on the project. Like, for example, Thor Dark World 2, the guy had limited freedom, and if you recall, they had someone come in and shoot the end, and he hated it. Like, you know, the ending stinger at the end.
Like, yeah, but they've had the same level of control on all the Marvel films.
Okay.
Marvel didn't step it up for Thor 2.
You don't think Black Panther director will have a bit more freedom? I'm sure he will. Ryan Coogler, when he comes to do Black Panther 2. Yes, he'll have a framework he has to adhere to.
A very strict framework, and you have to play in this world.
Well, look, Warner's have made a big deal. All I'm saying is we're going on literally the CEO, whatever he's managing director, saying that they're giving the filmmakers a bit more freedom, which I don't necessarily mind, to be honest. Like, as a movie lover, like, moving aside from just simply talking about the generic IPs mixing and blending and getting a perfect universe, I am all for good movies. Like, if we like a good superhero movie, you know, is fantastic. A good movie. I'm just a movie lover in general. So if I can have slightly different tones, and we know Shazam's going to have a different tone to Aquaman. And Aquaman and Shazam are going to have a different tone to Birds of Prey. They're different movies. So I don't really mind. The challenge, as you say, is you get Harley and Wonder Woman and Matt Reeves Batman and fucking Aquaman and whoever else in a room, how do you shoot it? Is what you're sort of pointing to.
Isn't and it? That's what they set up in Justice League. They set up an impossible task.
Yeah, and I also thought they had a paper-thin story as well, like, over the top of it, like, to be honest.
There was no end to the problems.
Like, I'm sort of like...
But it was destined to fail before they'd started.
I mean, yes, and losing their director midway through for another director, it didn't help either. But the problems were legion. I think there's a whole making of Justice League from the beginning where Snyder started shooting it, like, if you recall, only like 2 or 3 weeks after Batman Superman was out in cinemas, he was shooting that movie. The problems on that movie are legion. Like, there is a making of documentary about that whole thing, I think, really, frankly. I think it's going to be a long time before we even have to worry about this. I think that DC Warners are going to focus on the individual movies and probably have some cameos in their movies to fill them out a little bit, maybe some co-starring roles. I think it's going to be quite a long time, Stu, before we even have to think about a new Justice League movie. I think it's way down the road. You know, I really do believe that. But anyway, we'll move on. That's a very interesting topic, though. And thank you, Stu. That was actually, I found that very interesting. Now, okay, so where are we? The Watchmen TV show, Stu. So this was, you know, this is the show. How forward are you looking to this show? The tagline is "Nothing ever ends," Stu. And there was a, have you seen the smiley face Rorschach image that sort of leaked?
Yeah. Look, I like The Watchmen. I want to see a decent TV show.
HBO TV show. I mean, it sounds, you say that, it sort of sounds promising, but when I saw that smiley face Rorschach, I wasn't thrilled. Personally,
look. If put it this way, if it got cancelled tomorrow, I'm not losing any sleep.
No,
it's not massively high on my list of things I have to see.
Is part of that because we're so inundated with this media? Like, we've got so much choice. We've got so many seasons of CW, and so many seasons and so many movies from all different, you know, Marvel and DC. Is part of it that like you've got so much choice? Let alone like your Netflix shows. Let alone non superhero fare.
Yeah. I mean, for me, HBO is more about Game of Thrones and Ballers and these other kind of great dramas they've got going on at the moment than anything superhero.
Yeah.
Definitely. But, yeah, part of it's just we've got a lot already.
Yeah, that's part of it for me. I mean, yeah, I don't know. And also it's a sequel. The tagline is "Nothing ever ends," and I tweeted them, "Nothing ever ends, ... especially when you're milking the shit out of something." Which I thought was quite funny. You got a few likes on
that. I mean, I'm more excited for, like, the Lord of the Rings TV show that's coming out.
For sure.
Than Watchmen.
The Amazon one.
Yeah.
For sure. Me too. Part of my excitement for that is, like, for me, it's a sequel aspect as well. I'm like, it's a sequel to Watchmen, so we're just doing all new stories. And I haven't found, what's it called, Doomsday Clock at all compelling? Like, at all compelling.
Well, no, but have you read past issue 2 or 3?
I've read 3 or 4 of them, I think. And I actually listened to, shout out to the guys on Punisher Body Count. They do a issue by issue, and, like, their reviews are not positive. At best, it's a pastiche, like, of the whole thing. Like, it's still just a sort of shallow imitation of the original. It's not really anything.
No, it's never going to be as good as the original is viewed so highly.
I know, but that's it.
They're never going to be able to compete.
But what Geoff Johns is bringing to the table, like, none of it sounds that amazing. Like, really. Like, they've done full critiques of it, like Dane Lamont and Jacob. And, I mean, and Jacob is like a full-on Watchmen head, you know, as in, like, fully is into it, like, has full annotated notes and stuff all about it. Like, whereas I like Watchmen, but I'm not sort of that deep into it. I mean, they're breaking down Doomsday Clock. Other than a few interesting sequences, it doesn't sound that compelling, frankly. And I'm sort of equally...
Look, I think it'll become a lot realer once we get casting news, once we get some actors behind it. Maybe that'll change.
Yeah.
For me, Neil Gaiman's, was it Bad Omens?
Good Omens.
The new TV show.
Yeah.
For me, sounded like a nothing until I saw the casting.
Oh, yeah, Good Omens is great.
And once I saw the casting and once I saw that, I got super excited for it, and I was really happy to see it.
Good Omens, dude, the book with Terry Pratchett and him.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, but when I read the TV synopsis, I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine, but I'm not rushing out to see it, same as Watchmen. It's okay, but I'm not going to kill people to get there.
I mean, yeah, Good Omens is very well cast as well, and he's heavily involved.
Yeah, but as soon as I see the casting and I see David Tennant playing the demon, I was like, yes, sign
me
up.
And that guy that plays, what's that guy's name? He plays, he's played Tony Blair a couple of times and stuff like that, the British guy.
Sheen, isn't it?
Yes, Michael Sheen. Good actor.
Yeah,
and he'll be interesting in as well. You know, it is watch your space. I mean, I fully reviewed Titans last episode, Stu. And surprisingly, I had very low expectations, the audience heard, but it was surprisingly decent, to be honest. And my expectations were very low. You know what I mean? And it was... I enjoyed it, like, for what it was. Robin is, by the way, almost Punisher-level violent, which is an odd choice.
It is an odd choice. Like, that doesn't fit with that character.
I read it. Watched it, and I was like, whoa. Okay, Robin. Like, and strangely enough, Dick Grayson as the cop, he doesn't give you that vibe. But then when he's Robin, it's like a sort of switch is flipped. It's quite odd. It's not a great show by any means, but when your expectations are so low and then you're like, oh, it's better than I thought. That's kind of what it was. So anyway, I don't know. Like, Watchmen, I guess I'll try to keep my expectations realistic. Now, Stu, we're pushing something up here. We're actually reviewing in Weekly Comics. We're doing Nightwing 51. But it's also a news item because it's kind of hit like a lot of the DC chat boards and stuff, because DC Comics, Stu, is changing Nightwing's name to Rick Grayson. The change comes as a result of Dick/Rick's case of amnesia brought on by a non-fatal bullet to the head in Batman 55. Without his memories, Rick no longer feels connected to Nightwing and proceeds to burn down his old hideout. Though he still seems interested in fighting crime, the man who woke up post-shooting is no longer interested in wearing blue and black spandex. Now, this hit a lot of the boards along with a, image from the comic which said, you know, my name is Rick Grayson. It used to be called Dick Grayson. And we read the comic show, and that's very much a dream sequence, but nonetheless he does call himself Rick Grayson. What's your reaction? And we also can bring in, obviously, that we've read the comic, so we'll push that forward now. What did you think of, A, the comic, and even, B, this revelation?
The revelation itself I kind of see as a little bit pointless.
Sure.
It's making a change so everyone's well aware that they've changed this character.
Yeah. Yes.
Good point, Stu. They've done this before, and it didn't really work then. I don't know why it's going to work now.
Well, the image at the end was him with a gun, and wearing the Nightwing armor with a gun. I thought it was a little on the nose.
Yeah. I mean, from the point of view of the comic, it wasn't a great issue.
No.
Like, this isn't... If this story was told really well, then you can get away with it.
Yeah.
Something cheesy like changing his name from Dick Grayson to Rick Grayson is fine if it's backed up by a really cool story.
Sure.
Because then, forevermore, they go, Rick Grayson, you know, he used to be Dick, but then this happened, and everyone goes, oh, yeah, I know Rick Grayson. That becomes the new norm.
Like, I can think of the 70-issue Chuck Dixon storyline had some cheesy, funny storylines that were well told. You know, there were some hijinks in there.
And there's plenty of characters that have changed names. I mean, look at Marvel to Shazam.
Mm. Yes.
Like, that's a character that changed names, and people just went, okay, fine, the name has changed now.
Yeah. That was a trademark problem.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Changed for different reasons, but the name of the character changed.
Do you really believe Dick Grayson will ever stay as Rick Grayson for very long? This is Dick Grayson Robin from the fucking 30s.
Well, they needed to really do a good story if it was ever going to stick for longer than, like, 5 issues.
I have an issue with... Like, I get that an amnesic storyline can work. I am a writer, and we've all been down this road. You know what I'm saying, Stu? When you're doing drama, every writer, at a certain point, has an amnesic story. So I'm not totally against it, but this felt lazy.
Look, for me, it's a sign of laziness. It's a sign of writing yourself into a corner and going, well, how do I get out of this plausibly? And there's only a couple of ways to do that other than shattering reality and going to the source wall.
Well, it gets Geordi all over again. It's like amnesic storyline is kind of like your bargain basement, like when you've got nothing else.
It's the easiest way to get out of a corner you've written yourself into.
And I saw a plot by Scott Lobdell. Now, this guy has more stinkers than anyone I can think of working in DC Comics. I don't know what it is with this guy. He keeps Red Hood and the Outlaws going, Stu, despite lackluster sales, poor reviews. It's been going since New 52, and now he's doing the plots for Nightwing and Rick Grayson. Like, does this guy ever bring anything worth, you know, bringing to the table?
Yeah, this is...
He just is like a garbage trash.
This whole thing for me is just meh.
Yeah. What would you give? I gave it a 6. I didn't think it was as bad as I expected it to be without, like, loving it at all. But I gave it a 6 out of 10. What did you give the
average? I gave it a 5. Right on average. Right on average.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough, man. Fair enough.
It's readable. It's part of a collection, I suppose, but I wouldn't be buying it.
For me, it's Nightwing completist only. Yeah. You know, if you're not a Nightwing completist, walk away. Because what we just told you...
Whether this issue becomes collectible because first time he's been called by that name.
Yeah.
Potentially, if you want to buy a single, this could be something to buy if you're looking at value.
Sure.
But if you're looking at story-wise, I'd be buying it as a massive omnibus as one of 50.
Sure.
And hoping the other 49 are good.
Yeah, and by the way, for Batman Universe, I reviewed Nightwing for like 2 years, fortnightly. And believe you me, that's a grind.
Yeah, as
a fortnight review, I enjoy Harley Quinn, so I mean it's easy for me to do. But even that's a grind. But Nightwing fortnightly, believe you me, was a grind. But you know why? Because it wasn't particularly bad, but it also wasn't very good.
Yeah, I think you're going to find that on pretty much any title, though.
True.
When you've got to read every single title every week.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Every character goes through ups and downs, and when it's a comic book that's fortnightly or monthly.
Oh yeah, fortnightly.
And a down may only last 6 issues.
Sure, but it feels like a long time.
But that's 3 months if it's fortnightly.
Believe you me, as someone who has to punch out his 600 words exactly every fortnight.
And writing a review every fortnight for 3 months on something that's boring.
Sure, some of them I've been writing for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Put it this way, I couldn't wait to get off Nightwing by the end, only because it was so... you said meh, and I don't really like to use that term. I find it's overused, but I personally, it really summed up that emotion for me. There were so many 6 out of 10s, Stu. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was like, it felt like, and then occasionally there was like a 3.5, and you almost enjoyed the 3.5 because it was so bad. And then it was back to, it's okay. And would I buy this? This is the question I ask myself when I'm reviewing. If I'm in a store and I walk in fresh, and I picked this up and flipped through the first few issues, would I read it? Would I buy it with my own money?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you forget that it's actually a product. Because, you know, you're getting the review copies.
After reading this, do I want to buy the next issue?
Sure.
That's the kind of litmus test for me.
Definitely.
So when I'm reading this...
Definitely.
I'm not going to buy the next issue. It lives on a cliffhanger.
It does.
And I'm okay not hearing the second half of that
Nightwing
story.
Nightwing the Cowboy, basically.
Yeah, and I'm okay not hearing the rest of that story.
I'm like,
I will not lose sleep over that.
No. Famously, Dan DiDio hates Nightwing and / Dick Grayson and has tried to kill him in the comics several times, and reader outcry has generally brought him back. Like, he was supposed to die in Infinite Crisis. He was supposed to die in Forever Evil. Like, Dan DiDio has never liked Nightwing. He's always had a thing about Nightwing for some reason.
Yeah, but I imagine a lot of creators have a couple of characters that, for whatever reason, they just don't like.
Yeah, understandable. And, I mean, he's running DC, so, I mean, you know, the comic side of the business. So
I mean, if I was running Marvel, you'd have a few characters that are in trouble.
Oh, yeah, but, like, I think...
If you're running Marvel, I'd have a few characters that would be in trouble.
Yeah, but I think if you're, like, if you're serious and you're running a comic book company like that, you need to distance yourself from your dislikes and try to make the whole package appealing. Like, I get your point, but, like, it's unprofessional to walk in and go, apparently he has a real thing about Nightwing, supposedly. And who knows why? We don't know why. I mean, it could be a creative thing. Who knows? We don't know. We actually don't know, but he just famously, maybe he's one of those guys who thinks, there's plenty out there who thinks he should have been Robin, and the second he wasn't Robin, you know, he should have been dead. Like, you know, kind of, that was his role in life sort of thing. Maybe he's viewing it through that prism.
Yeah.
Whereas, funnily enough, he was one of the success stories for DC that they managed to transition into a different hero. So it's just funny. But for me, this won't last 20 issues. I doubt this will last 20 issues. I guarantee you he'll be back to Dick Grayson within 20 issues.
Oh, I would have said less than 20. I would have said like 5 or 6. Probably. I can't probably see it lasting that long.
We actually will keep, just for fun, Stu, we will keep a counter. And without having to read the fucking issues, I'll keep an eye out.
And my friends awake, Dave.
Sorry.
Struggling.
My friends at Batman Universe who are reviewing the title, I said, let me know when he's back to Dick Grayson, because I don't think it'll be long. They've already got Alfred bloody in the issue, like leading him through therapy almost, you know.
Yeah, calling him Dick and having to correct himself.
Yeah.
It's not going to last.
And he's having full-on flashbacks where he's Dick Grayson as Nightwing.
Exactly.
Like, it's not that wild a separation.
No.
Now, some Suicide Squad comic news, Stu. DC will end its current volume of Suicide Squad, which has run since Rebirth, in January, as the Robin Williams pen title wraps up at issue 50. This is interesting. He's written all 50 of the issues, Stu. He's been doing it since Rebirth. The issue will feature art by Diogenes Neves and Scott Hanna. Scott Hanna, I like as an artist, along with a cover by Jim Lee and Scott Williams, and another cover by Francesco Martina. I don't know, Stu, like, and there's talk, and it is not confirmed, as in press release confirmed, but there's heavy rumours that Azzarello is going to be rebooting Suicide Squad as a Black Label title, alongside the Rucker stuff going on, and Kelly Sue DeConnick on Wonder Woman, etc.
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's a big enough name to launch a black title.
Hard-boiled kind of drama is kind of his cup of tea, you know?
Yeah.
No, I agree too. I want to say something here. Should we always talk about how X-Men has just completely left us? It feels as a comic. Both of us have been X-Men fans, and it just feels like the X-Men franchise is just not enticing in the comics. I saw a David Finch cover for Uncanny X-Men 1, and Stuart is so gloriously 90s. Like, consciously. And I looked at it, and I thought to myself, could this be the ticket for bringing back lapsed readers to X-Men comics? Like, going that way. It just like, you know, it's so consciously when you see the cover, you're like, wow, that, like, you know.
Well, I mean, they're just trying to entice people based on nostalgia. That's,
I know. But, like, isn't that half the trick sometimes with these things?
Yeah, I feel like if they thought it was a success story, they wouldn't need to do that.
Well, I mean, they've made a lot of news about how having Guggenheim and stuff on X-Men Gold and X-Men Red and X-Men Blue. Now, we haven't really read much of it, but none of it's excited me, what I have read.
Yeah.
I mean, X-Men Red with Tom Taylor has actually had some decent praise. So I sort of feel bad. I haven't super checked it out myself, but they need to do something. I don't know what the answer is to bring the X-Men franchise in the comics back. Maybe it is as simple as they become popular again in the movies, you know, and comic book, you know, sales, you know, for X-Men pick up a bit. I don't know. Like, it just feels like even Bendis, I don't think was hitting home runs, and he was probably the last interesting person to be on X-Men, for me personally as a reader.
Yeah.
The beginning of his X-Men run was very interesting, and I thought it got very poor, like about halfway through. Before that, I look at Fraction and Brubaker as the last people that made me really care about the X-Men, you know?
It's been a while. It's been a long while.
Yeah, it has. It's been almost 10 years now, Stuart.
But on.
Okay, weekly comics. Now, we won't bother doing the Nightwing comic because I think we've already reviewed it. You gave it a 5 out of 10, Stu, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
I gave it a 6. Now, the first one we did this week was What If Metal Took Over Marvel, and it's also Ghost Rider 1. Now, in this interesting story, basically a metal band, Stu, that possibly could be like a tribute to a real band, into the Marvel offices. One of the guys is a massive fan of Marvel Comics. Robbie Reyes, we know him as the Ghost Rider, is kind of like the office gopher, almost. C.B. Sabowski's there. He's talking to him, the new editor-in-chief. Interesting. Like, I thought it was funny. Basically, they have a pact with some sort of demon, or they are a demon. They get inside the Marvel printers, and it's wild and wacky stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. It feels almost like Metalocalypse, if people are familiar with that.
I know the name.
Series.
Yeah.
Where it's this kind of far-out metal band that goes on adventures together.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I don't know whether this was influenced by it or whether there's another influence.
Sure.
But it felt entirely devoid of any good Ghost Rider.
Yes, Ghost Rider. As
Ghost Rider was in it.
Yes.
But that's about it.
And shout out, by the way, to friends of the show, big friends of Collective Inner Demons. These guys are legends, and I purposely put this in because I was hoping to give them a good ranking. Now, Ghost Rider isn't bad in this. He's just not in it enough.
I don't think there was much Ghost Rider.
He's just not essential to anything.
He's in there and he's around, but he's not... It's not great Ghost Rider.
The end is kind of like... It ends in kind of a hellscape, and he's like riding in his car, and kind of that's his moment of glory. But for most of it, yes, he's just literally the office gopher, and he's just kind of like a bystander almost to the action.
Yeah, but even when he's in it, I just... this is a complete swing and a miss for me.
I gave it. You might be surprised. I gave it a solid. I read this last night before sleep. I thought it was a pretty solid artistic issue in that I enjoyed the art. I actually had some laughs. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10, and yet found it completely inessential. But I had some laughs. But I feel like you're lower.
For me, it's a 4. It's cool. It wasn't a great What If. It wasn't a great Ghost Rider. It wasn't.
It almost wasn't a What If, I would almost say. Like, the What If of it was...
It didn't
like,
really deliver on any of the promised fronts.
What If the Ghost Rider What If didn't have a lot of Ghost Rider? That was kind of more it.
Yeah, and despite saying it would go on metal,
yeah,
it very quickly became nothing about metal or the band. Almost immediately, it just became three people who had a pact with the devil or a demon. And there was very little, if any, metal reference at all, other than it was a metal band.
The introduction was it, really.
That was it.
Agreed.
So it didn't really deliver on the title, the characters, or the books.
I can imagine a Ghost Rider fan being very disappointed by this issue.
Yeah.
Because, like, Ghost Rider is such a wild character, such a cool character, that it really opens himself. When I saw What If Ghost Rider, I was like, this could really be good.
Yeah, and you and I both enjoy Robbie Reyes.
We love Robbie Reyes, yeah.
It's not a case of the bad characters in there.
No, definitely not. And, I agree with what Stu's saying. Look, a Ghost Rider fan, I think, could be... I'd be interested to see what Inner Demons think of it, actually. I'll reach out to them. Because I'm sure they
awake that long.
Okay, I know. I'm sure they would have done it on their show when it comes to Inner Demons. I'm sure they'll do this. They do all Ghost Rider. Now... Stu, something a lot more interesting was cover 2. I read cover 1 and 2 because I know you did cover 1 when I was in Hawaii.
Yeah, with the anime show we did cover 1.
Yes. Now, so I read both. Bendis and David Mack on art. For me, Stu, one of the most interesting things I've seen from Bendis in maybe a decade. I have been so underwhelmed by Bendis in almost 10 years. Like, it's been a long time. I found he's gotten blander and blander and blander and more predictable almost with each year. This was like a breath of fresh air. Without it being interesting it wasn't great, but it was just really interesting. I really enjoyed this story.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not the best comic I've ever read. And it's similar to the review that we gave for issue 1.
Mm.
It's fine. It's brings a lot of intrigue. It was a good issue 1.
Sure.
Coming into this one, the art style is still phenomenally good.
Yes.
The watercolored artwork that they did just was so
David
nice.
Mack is an incredible point here.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But the story itself, it's got a lot of depth to it. We're now starting to get these characters fleshed out a bit more. We've still got that kind of mystery as to how much do these people know. And
I mean, the basic concept is just basically there's an artist... slash creator, I guess you could say, who has an indie book that's reasonably successful and this woman approaches him, and she buys some very expensive originals at the first show. There's and sort of like then suddenly she reveals that basically she disappears on him after giving him some sort of at a very expensive dinner. And
yeah,
then,
so that's all issue one.
Yeah, and then in issue two, he's invited to Istanbul. He arrives. She turns up. And he first tries to get away from her. She then reveals that she's a spy, and she's looking to get operatives outside the kind of normal box. And, you know, gives him some stuff, which he gives to the Turkish president, et cetera, et cetera. And so he sort of unwittingly becomes an operative. But the feature of it is much more about the art. There's some nice dialogue without that normal heavy-fisted dialogue that Bendis has become so proficient at over the last 10 years. Like, it's just, it's infected his books. In this one, he has a better tone. Characters aren't speaking alike. Like, that's unfortunately a Bendis trope. Everyone speaks the same. Exact same sense of humour. Like, and the art is fantastic. I really actually thought very highly of both cover one and two. You have to read them as a piece.
Oh, this is absolutely a series. This isn't a pick up one issue and see what happens.
I mean, for me, it's an 8.5 out of 10, Stu, for both issues.
Yeah, same. I'm at 8.5 as well. This is a really solid read.
What do you think this means for Bendis? Because Bendis coming to DC, we've discussed it off air. I think he was creatively tapped out at Marvel completely.
Yes, although I feel like he was just creatively tapped out.
Wow.
And I don't think, after reading what he's done at DC, that it was necessarily a Marvel problem.
No, I agree, yeah.
I think he'd written for years, had great success.
Sure.
And he needs to take maybe a year away from writing comic books.
Which he certainly hasn't done.
And refresh and recharge his batteries and...
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know, spend a year reading or travelling or something completely out there.
Mm, yeah.
Because he has felt drained.
Stale.
Yeah. And across multiple titles as well.
I mean, look, we read Superman, and I wouldn't say Superman was fantastic.
No.
It's
very run-of-the-mill. I feel like 9 out of 10 artists and writers could have produced a book very similar.
It felt very lacking in anything very interesting. I used to love Bendis's writing. Like, his Ultimate Spider-Man, his New Avengers, I read them, Stu, genuinely excited. And guess what? Eventually I got to a point where it's like, this is really spinning the wheels. We're really spinning the wheels now, Brian. And I sort of basically stopped, and I would sample his stuff, and I felt it just got worse and worse. Sort of almost without any flavour. This is the first thing that's interested me in almost a decade, and I'm not exaggerating. It's been that long. And apparently a big factor in Bendis leaving Marvel was that his indie deal, his Jinx World stuff, has been given a full legs up at DC. They've relaunched the brand. They're reprinting everything that he's done. Like, they're acquiring it all. And they're putting it all out in new hardcovers, new trade. They're giving him a huge push as his creator-owned work.
But, see, for me, it feels almost like he would have actually been better suited going to someone like Image.
Well, and you think he could have, too.
Well, he definitely could have.
Yeah.
The paycheck would have been less. Yeah, well, I mean, DC's offering him a massive paycheck because he's covering things like Superman.
Exactly, yeah.
He's done work for them, and then they'll let him publish his own thing. It's kind of a some for you, some for me.
And they know that he can do 4 titles a month. This is Bendis. Exactly. Like, regardless of quality, he must sell a certain amount of titles because they keep putting him on stuff.
Yeah, they're getting their money's worth as well as he's.
Yeah. But Marvel weren't prepared to do the same in terms of his Jinx World deal.
No, but I feel like his strongest contribution to comics now, going forward, is Jinx World. It's his own creative content.
Yeah.
And someone like Image would let him do what he wanted.
Well, Image, he's doing what Brubaker does. He could just put out his own books. He owns them 100%.
Yeah.
Like, they take off the printing costs, basically, and some marketing, and the rest is all gravy. Well, yeah, I'm sort of surprised Bendis hasn't done that.
Like, Bendis has a name that's big enough, same as someone like Miller, that he can go across very successfully.
The paycheck must be substantial. Like, apparently...
Oh, no doubt. Otherwise, he would have gone with something more creator-focused.
Well, apparently, it's a... Look, the thing is, I heard John Suntrust talking this about Brubaker. The reason Brubaker left was simply that it just was so onerous doing X many titles. He did a lot of titles too.
Yeah.
And turning them in on... He'd done it for years too. He'd done it at DC for many years. It just becomes incredibly exhausting, and then you've got your indie stuff on top, And Scott Snyder has said, like, he did, like, say, Witches, example, an Image. He's saying, I'm making more money off that than I'm making off Batman. You know, and he's selling, like, so much less.
It's but I feel like a lot of these writers, you do go through that grind to build a name for yourself and to get some titles under your belt. And then you get to a point in your career where you realize that the longevity of your work and the enjoyment you get from it is more important.
Sure.
And you, people are often willing to sacrifice a higher pay packet for something that's more enjoyable, or something that's better fit for them. That's why someone like Miller would go to Image.
Sure. Frank Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he built, like, Dark Horse Comics with his Sin City stuff and everything.
Yeah, but he could get paid more if he took on major titles with DC and wrote his own stuff with DC or Marvel or...
Yeah, I mean, yes, I would think so. But, yeah, he hasn't done that for, you know, 30 years.
Yeah, because he decided, I'm at this point now where my own personal happiness is more important than the extra $20,000 on top of that paycheck.
And as well, I mean, and Bendis is obviously, we'll say this about Bendis, like, he is the consummate professional.
I feel like Bendis has kind of made the compromise between those two ideals.
Yeah.
He's gone, I want more creative control, and I want to do more of my own stuff, but I still really enjoy having a massive pay packet.
And there is basically there's the risk. Like, Brubaker, when he eventually wrapped, you know, his Captain America stuff and his associated Marvel stuff, he took a definite risk. He said, I'm going to go to Hollywood, and I'm going to write pilots for TV shows, and I'm going to publish through Image with Sean Phillips, my own creator and work. Now, it's Brubaker and Phillips. They obviously, they definitely have a loyal readership. He's obviously making enough money out of that, and he's got a show, et cetera, et cetera. He took a different risk. Bendis seems to be almost like, I want that. Like, he had the show Powers that he'd been trying to get off the air for years, like decade and a half. But it feels like Bendis is also like, you know what, though? I can still do my four titles a month and get that pay packet from Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a wife and kids as well. Like, you know, he's got a family to feed. Like, don't forget, they've got bills like anyone else.
Yeah.
I've heard Rucker on it.
I feel like at this point, money's not a problem, though.
I don't think it's a problem for Bendis.
No.
I think Bendis has shown for so many years that he can do it and has done it for so long, the money. And don't forget, all his stuff's in trades. It's all
reprinted. Yeah, but at this point, the extra money is, can I get the investment property this year, or do I have to wait 2 years?
Exactly.
It's not a case of, can I feed my family this week?
But what do you think about Rucker, for example? Rucker, at times, has spoken quite openly that, like, the sheer amount, because he did, you know, in his day, he did a large number of DC titles. He was like your go-to guy.
Yeah.
I think the workload, it can be quite crippling. And then he's gone and done his solo stuff, and he's openly talked on Word Balloon that you only sell a certain amount. Like, he doesn't sound like he's rolling around in heavy money. Like, he's putting kids through college too. Like, you know, like, there is some sort of trade-off. Like, I'm surprised a guy like him doesn't, I guess he did Wonder Woman, doesn't come back and go, I can do one title for you guys, and I can put it in every single month. Like, with his level of talent, you know?
I mean, if he needed the money, that's certainly an option.
Yeah.
But yeah. I feel like it's the same as, like, young families, like, people in their 20s to 30s when they've got young kids.
Sure.
Often they'll work like two jobs. They'll work themselves to a level that's not sustainable long term. But they're seeing it as, this is 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
If I can get through this period, then we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to work cheaper. Ridiculous.
When they're going through college, like, and they're exclusive colleges in the States, like, that's expensive.
You know? Well, yeah, but at that stage, it's not on you to pay for 100%.
Sure.
If he's choosing to do that, that's absolutely his choice.
Yeah, and just
kids could chip in. He could, like,
oh yeah, and I'm not talking out of school. I'm sort of more theorizing. Like, I don't know
the answer. Yeah, like, when you've got a newborn, you are that's it.
Yeah, it's your responsibility 1,000%.
Absolutely,
yeah, you've got to
every minute of that day. You are.
You're right. The kids can start taking on jobs themselves. They're starting to
once the kids hit, you know, 16, 17. Sure. You're like, okay, well,
yeah.
How about instead of me paying for you to go to the movies with your friends, you pay for you?
And who knows, when Rucker came on and he's doing some Black Label titles, I mean, there's one of them, surely he's got a pretty decent deal to bother coming back. And he's not doing the old style where he was doing like 3 or 4 titles a month and it's much more of a grind.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. I always found it interesting that Scott Snyder, at the peak of his Batman, though, he was saying he made more money per issue off Witches, which sold like a quarter, if not less, in his Batman run. So the Image deal was more favourable than his DC deal.
Well, yeah, but the biggest companies will always sign you up to a worse deal because they've got the power to do so.
Yeah, and he didn't.
And that's how they become the biggest companies.
And when he got onto Batman, he was certainly not as big. You know, he was one of those guys who was hired on the strength of a bit of American Vampire. He became huge as he became on Batman, so, and eventually left. It's interesting. The economics of the industry, I mean, we've been through it so many times. Like, I think it's great to see, like, Bendis has got the golden deal in that, like, he's writing Superman, two Superman titles and other stuff, and he's got his Jinx World. But I will say this for Bendis, like, love him or hate him, the guy is a true pro and has done it for so many years that I sort of think if anyone deserves it, like, you know, he's certainly sold enough comics, you know, and his quality level, I think, has diminished, but his productivity hasn't. You know,
yeah, but
it's
that's
weird, but it's true.
That's not a praise. That's, well, that's actually pretty insulting to him.
Well, I think it's a fairly accurate summation of what's happened. Would you agree it's accurate?
Probably.
We're on Signal. I mean, I'm not Brian Michael Bendis' best friend. I'm allowed to. I think he rarely, if ever, misses deadlines. He always turns up on time. There's a reason he's got this deal, is what I'm saying. There's a reason they've set up this very favourable creator-owned deal at DC for him with the Jinx World stuff, surely to entice him over, and he's still punching away on Superman titles. I'd be interested, actually, honestly, listeners, when you're busy, once you've voted on whatever fucking disputes you and I had earlier, give us your thoughts on Bendis's current work and his direction. I'd be interested to get some listener feedback, Stu, because we've kind of given our views, but it's always interesting because all these guys who listen to the show, a lot of them read like a ton of comics, man. Like, that's one thing from talking to them, and you get so many different viewpoints, and they come in from every fucking angle. Like, I find it very interesting. Like, you know, I can have conversations with like 10 people, and it's almost like 10 completely different views, and it's quite cool. So I'd be interested to hear what people think of what Bendis is doing now, what his Superman works like, what they think of the indie deal, and also of my critique of his career, where I say productivity has remained high, quality has dipped. Now, Stu, where are we up to in the weekly comics? Marvel Zombie?
Marvel Zombie number one.
Was one of my picks. It's our last pick of the week for weekly comics. Now, Stu, I picked this one on the title because of the old saying Marvel Zombies. I thought it might even have been a story of literally a Marvel zombie in, like, you know, the comic store. But instead it was a kind of nice post-apocalyptic tale starring, I think his name's Simon Garth.
Yep.
In sort of the zombie wasteland. Take it away, Stu. What did you think?
This was a super fun, very low stakes, one-off.
Sure.
If you're interested in something that's different, that's a bit out of the box,
yeah,
this is absolutely something you should be picking up.
If you enjoyed the Marvel Zombie series that have come out, I would say check it out as well.
Yeah, there's a dry sense of humour in there. It's got a eclectic sort of group of heroes.
Yep.
Spidey and Daredevil are the kind of two biggest names.
Down on their luck.
but there's a group of survivors, maybe, what, six, seven of them?
Yeah, Black Widow.
Black Widow, Hawkeye, Misty Knight.
Yeah.
There's a few of them in there.
Yeah,
kind of sprinkled names, through.
Yeah.
But it's just a really fun, lighthearted zombie read.
Yeah, definitely. I gave it, I'm not sure if I even gave it a score here. I gave it 8 out of 10. I said clever and thoughtful. I really quite enjoyed it.
I gave it a 9. I think this is almost the perfect little one-shot that we should be getting more of published from some of these big publishers.
1,000% agree with what Stu just said. Actually, Stu, I think this, out of the whole show where you have deliberately played the opposite game, this is the one thing I think where you have been on point. I would love to see this kind of thing more often from DC and Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
I think they're often a little too obsessed with writing a series, getting an artist and a writer to show up and do 50 issues or 100 issues.
Playing the long game all the time.
Yeah.
With mediocre titles, like, you know.
I mean, I'm happy if half of their titles are one-shots where you can pick it up, read it, put it down, and that's it.
And people say that that's what comics were. Comics was throw stuff at the wall.
Yeah,
like, that
exactly
was the whole concept of comics.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, let's write a 72-parter.
Yeah.
Like, that came later.
Because, look, if in 6 months' time people are still crying out, give us more in this universe.
Sure, I'm sure they will.
That's exactly what they can do, and that's they will do.
And Marvel Zombies, they certainly have mined that well a few times.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be honest, yeah, I agree. This was actually a really clever, fun comic. I'd strongly recommend people pick this one up. Now, we move to Trade of the Week, Stu. This is our short show, by the way. This was our short show. And we are to blame because we argued for about 40 minutes on one topic. So, to a draw, by the way. And this week is The Century. It's Stu's pick. Stu, oh, well, Stu's got a beautiful hardcover over there that he's just leafing through. Stu, do you want to take us away with what The Century concept is?
So, Century is... He's a character that doesn't get a lot of airtime. Shows up every now and again in a bunch of big crossovers because he's a useful end game piece.
Heavy use in Civil War and around that period with New Avengers with Bendis.
Yeah. Used then, used well in Siege.
Yes.
Used well at the end of World War Hulk.
Yes. Yes. Very well used, actually.
Yeah. They pull him out when they need a big player to step onto the field. Yeah.
A big gun with problems.
A big gun with problems. So to give people that have never heard of Sentry a basic rundown, Sentry Robert Reynolds is his name.
Mm-hmm.
He's agoraphobic, manic depressive, bipolar.
Is agoraphobic, does that mean it's scared of outdoors?
Scared of open spaces.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. So he'll often like cower inside his small one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
And he can't ever leave.
And that's what he does later on in Civil War. He's literally inside his... Yeah, he's just basically stuck in a chair, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can't get out. He can't leave. Manic depressive, bipolar, like schizophrenic. He's got a laundry list of mental illnesses attached to him. He struggles to function as a human being.
And what's interesting in this one is we don't know that yet, do we?
No, this was the very first introduction.
Mm.
But he's written... He's always been written as like an out-of-shape... weak, kind of scruffy-looking, middle-aged guy.
Sure.
Who's... you just think this guy's a nobody.
Sure.
Absolute loser.
He's a loser.
Never amounts to anything.
And yet, as we say, in this one, it's very much... This is Paul Jenkins introing the character in Marvel Knights, and we don't know... We know none of that, do we?
No. And the story behind when this comic came out is actually kind of fascinating.
Mm.
So it started in... This comic was released in 2000, but in 99, Marvel decided to start playing around with their fans.
Mm-hmm.
So they put up a little notice in the back of a comic. I'm just trying to find the actual comic title that they found. Daredevil. July of 1999, in an issue of Daredevil, Marvel mentioned an editorial that an obscure artist from the 1960s named Artie Rosen had fallen unwell. And it was followed in January of 2000 by an announcement in Wizard magazine, so not owned by Marvel, separate magazine entirely, that Rosen had passed away. And a couple of months after that, the magazine revealed that there was a long-lost superhero created by Rosen and Stan Lee in the 1960s that had been discovered among his personal effects.
That's cool.
And Paul Jenkins announced that he was going to be taking that character and writing a new series.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what Sentry was.
Mm. And he's a very accomplished British writer, Paul Jenkins. He's a good writer.
Absolutely. The one thing they didn't tell anyone was all of this was made up.
It's all fake.
Artie Rosen never existed.
Yeah.
It's a made-up name between Artie Simic and Sam Rosen, both accomplished writers and artists in the 60s.
Right.
But they just took two names and put them together.
So it's a fictional biography, basically.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But they got interviews with Stan Lee saying how Love much it. He missed the guy.
Love it.
They completely made up a fictional character that nobody remembered to sell a book about a character that nobody could remember.
Yes, because that's the plot of this, really.
And that's
isn't it?
Where this Century book comes in.
It's a little bit of meta, isn't
it? It's a little
bit
meta, and this is before the internet was massive. So this was.
Yeah. And this was in the day, just to give readers a bit of history, Marvel Knights was when Joe Q, Joe Quesada, and Jimmy Palmiotti, basically when Marvel was pretty much bankrupt, were basically given the job of, like, no one had high expectations. And they were basically given that you could do whatever
well,
you wanted.
Well, this was Joe Quesada.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys behind the scenes pulling the strings here.
Yeah.
And this is before his rise to editor-in-chief.
This is how he became it.
Exactly.
Him and Jimmy Palmiotti in a room basically created Marvel Knights. And it was like Daredevil, Punisher, this whole selection of stuff. And it really sold well and resonated, and it was because Marvel, at that point, had no more shits to give. They were almost out of business.
Yeah.
They sold a ton of properties, including X-Men, to all the different studios, and surprisingly enough, stuff like their Punisher Man Called Frank and this and plenty of the Marvel Knights titles hit.
Yeah.
And they suddenly had a hit on their hands they almost just didn't expect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a weird story when you first pick it up. It's about a guy who is starting to remember that he used to be one of the world's greatest superheroes.
Mm. And he's very much in a pretty bad place from memory. He's got a wife who's, you know, struggling.
He's got a wife, but his marriage is on the rocks, yeah, like, massively.
Big time.
He lives in a rundown house on the top of, like, the hill.
His dog, poor dog, he hits the dog.
Yeah, like, he's completely down and out.
He's unlikable, honestly, at the beginning. You're like, what is this guy? Like, what's going on? Is he just nuts?
And he seems to be having these weird flashbacks to himself in his, like, 20s wearing yellow spandex and standing alongside these other superheroes.
Kind of cheesy comic fantasies.
Massively cheesy.
Yeah.
Standing next to Reed Richards, his best friend.
Mm.
And then you see him flashback to reality and he's kind of moping through his house.
Yeah.
He puts on this old leather jacket with, like, a towel that's got clothes pegs to his back as like a cape.
A very brave moment by the art team and writing team to show him at that level, because you're really like, this guy really, like...
And he's kicking whiskey bottles around, like he's been drinking heavily.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he at one point, I think he backhands his wife and...
Yeah, I think so. He definitely hits the dog, and he definitely insults her. I'm not sure if he hits
her. Well, he may not actually hit her. He may have hit the dog and then just insulted her.
And he, put it this way.
Like, he's written as a very unlikable guy.
Yeah, in a very unlikable environment. Like, whatever he's done to get here, he's a failure, basically. And then, Stu, would you say gradually through his interior monologue, we start to question, is there something to this guy? Is he?
Well, the question is he insane?
Mm.
Does he remember something that nobody else does because it doesn't exist? Or is he the only person that remembers?
Like, he winds up on the girders of that thing talking to Reed Richards right on top of the building, like, and you're like, how did he get there?
Yeah, all of a sudden he appears, like, on the top of a crane, almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Just standing up in the middle of a construction site, and Reed, like, stretches up to him and basically says, with all the security systems we have here, how did you even get here?
Yeah.
It's impressive that you even got this far, and I don't know you.
Yeah.
And he has this weird conversation with Reed and a bunch of other characters, Spidey, Hulk, as he's going along, basically saying, you don't remember me, but I'm a superhero.
Mm.
And eventually you'll remember who I am.
Yeah, and there's a weird sense of dread through the whole thing. The art by Jay Lee, who I find good in limited doses, is wonderful. It's so stylized.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of this book, actually. The book is pretty much a lot of interior monologue, the original five issues. A bit of a think piece, but the art, I'd have to say, Stu, it is remarkable.
Yeah, it's stunning.
Yeah, and Jay Lee is a very gifted artist. I've read him in various titles along the way. He did stuff on Wolverine with Jason Aaron and many other things. There's a lot of covers, and you can see why.
Yeah.
It's very almost Mike Mignola kind of, like, style art. Like, it's very striking.
Yeah.
And I think, this title, clearly at the time... This was what I love about this is, like, I had read Sentry in kind of the more event comics where it's all a bit more
where he's pulled out as the end game big piece.
And I know that he's got the schizophrenia and stuff.
Hmm.
But this has the intrigue because you as the reader don't know what's really going on.
No, this is the perfect place to start if you've never heard of Sentry.
Oh yeah, you must start at the start.
This is one of those characters where the beginning is one of his best issues.
Definitely. And I didn't know that. I thought back then when Bendis was using him that was when he was created. I didn't actually, sort of 5 years later.
Yeah.
But Bendis very cleverly picked him out and thought, this is a character we could do something with.
Yeah.
No, it's excellent. And what develops is Sentry is going around, and gradually, as you get into the five issues, you realize he is for real. People have forgotten him.
Well, it's not just... He physically slowly transforms.
Yeah, the cape changes to a cape.
And all of a sudden his costume, which is a leather jacket and like a pegged-on sheet for a cape, slowly turns into like a skin-tight Lycra suit. He's got a flowing cape held on by like glowing symbols.
Mm.
His hair grows out slowly.
He's quite regal, really.
Yeah, but within like a couple of days, I'm assuming this is set over.
Yeah.
His hair goes from like a shaved head to, like, shoulder-length long hair.
Mm.
He bulks up to become, like, a Superman-esque figure. Yeah,
definitely.
And, I mean, that's clearly what's inspired this run. Like, a giant S is a symbol.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, a built character with a cape.
He's very much the Golden Age Superman.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
He's your Superman from the 30s and 40s, pretty much. A symbol as much as anything else. And something I loved in this, alongside the think piece, which at times I felt kind of repeated, something I loved was the comic book renditions through the different eras inside the five issues.
Yeah, so Marvel insisted on continuing with this ruse that it was a character we'd forgotten.
Mm.
So they would show flashbacks as if they'd been drawn by artists in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Really good. Like, you saw the Jack Kirby imitations and stuff. Like.
Yeah, so you would see him standing next to the Fantastic Four, and they're all drawn as if it was drawn in the 60s. And you remember seeing Reed drawn like that.
Oh, for sure.
So you can be forgiven for reading this and going, like, did I miss... Has this character just been around and then forgotten? Or?
I've always had a weakness for this kind of storytelling. I find it... British writers use it a lot. Ellis has used it in Stormwatch and in Authority.
Mm-hmm.
I find... I get it. If everyone did it all the time, it would suck. But Paul Jenkins knows what he's doing. He's actually quite a subtle writer. I've liked a lot of his work over the years. And he's aided by the art. The J. Lee art is so distinctive that when they switch it up with the comic book style art, the comic book style art really pops.
Yeah.
Because it's so different. And I'll tell you something I really like, Stu, is they didn't just content themselves with doing like 40s, 50s and 60s. They actually went the 90s version.
Yeah, they ran through the 80s and 90s. Yeah. They went the whole gambit.
I love that kind of stuff. One of my favorite issues of Stormwatch does Jenny Sparks throughout the whole 20th century. And and Ellis and... John Cassidy changed the artistic styles through it, and I always loved that issue. It's one of my favorite issues in comics, and this is told just as well, just as gracefully. It's a very graceful rendition, and the five issues go by, and it leads to a confrontation with this thing that's called the Void. And then what I thought was so clever, and I'm so glad, Stu, that you said to do it this way. There's a series of one shots.
Yeah, there are. So the original five issues for Century, and the only five issues in this run.
Yes. End on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, end on a cliffhanger. Yeah. But each issue, he deals with one of his super friends.
Yes.
Reed Richards and the Fantastic Four are the first issue. Mm-hmm. But we run through Spidey and the Hulk, X-Men. The X-Men. And then it's kind of an internal struggle with the final issue.
Yes.
The one-shots are written from the other point of view.
Yeah, very much so.
So we get Spidey, basically a Spidey-driven issue.
Who took the famous photo of him.
As Peter Parker, took the photo of the Sentry. Mm. And he kind of re-establishes this connection with the Sentry.
Yeah.
And it builds up, so you see both sides of the coin.
Mm.
The fascinating part with this character is the villain.
The Void.
The Void. Mm. So for those that don't know, the Void is actually created by him.
Yeah.
He is the Void.
Which only gets revealed in the very last issue.
It doesn't get revealed till the very end.
Yeah.
But it's something that's come up quite a few times in other Sentry books.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
So the Sentry's power creates its own negative.
Mm.
So there's this other entity, the Void, and as he becomes stronger and more capable, the Void is actually able to not just become a split personality, but to exist in the real world.
And cause damage.
Yeah. And cause damage. Mm. So the schizophrenia that he feels when he's depowered, is him and the Void kind of fighting for control over the same body. Yet when he becomes powerful enough, the Void becomes powerful, and it can take over reality, it can break free.
And does he use some kind of, like, juice to juice himself up? Reed mentions it, like, he's sort of some sort of serum?
Yeah, so it was meant to be super soldier related.
Right.
Again, they're going with the whole 60s forgotten era. So it was the same idea as, like, the Hulk and Cap and these sort of... we tried to replicate Cap's serum and we didn't quite get there.
I just want to say a quick shout-out to the Hulk issue I particularly liked, Bill Sienkiewicz on art.
Yeah.
And how about that fascinating moment where the writing narration is... It's Banner... And he says, when they were conducting the experiment, he goes, you went along and you sort of said, I question what we're doing here. But really, you were kind of interested in what happened. Well, you found out what happened, and it wasn't so wonderful after all. I thought the writing in that Hulk issue was excellent. Because Hulk is kind of like Sentry's one real, other than Richards, but Hulk and Sentry have their own bond, basically.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Sentry is written to be kind of a powerful Rick Jones.
Sure.
Like one of the very few characters that the Hulk can stand to be around. And
he takes away Hulk's pain somehow.
Well, the Hulk gets calmer when he's around this golden aura of Sentry.
Mm.
He's no longer rage-filled and angry. Mm. He feels calm and he can kind of live in his own skin.
Which is an interesting angle to take because it built the connection between them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to quickly jump back to the experiment side, just to show how low this character was, he broke into a lab facility and injected himself with this serum because he was looking for a hit.
Really? Is this in this comic?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, he didn't sign up and get chosen as a good candidate.
Oh.
He was such a strung-out drug addict that he broke into an abandoned military site.
Is that his origin?
Yeah, looking for drugs.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah, and he found this vial of serum.
Really?
Which hadn't worked on other people, and he injected it straight into his veins.
Oh.
Hoping for a high.
So that's how he started being the Sentry.
And that's how he first became the Sentry.
Oh, I must have missed that. So that's told in the old flashback style, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I love the
flashback. So it's very style. Dark.
Yes, it is dark, and it deals with... it's almost gloomy. It deals with sort of questions of identity, and even mental illness is kind of touched upon what's real, what's not, that kind of thing. And he always feels like the Sentry knows. His thing ends with, what if I'm not really a hero? That's how it actually, his five-issue park ends.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, he is his own villain. That's the beauty of this story.
I like that Ben Grimm had his suspicions.
Yeah.
But the thing actually, you know, I love the Fantastic Four one-shot because of the way they did that cheesy style of Fantastic Four, kind of like 80s art.
Yeah.
I really thought it fit well with the storyline. Like, the whole thing was quite masterful. In 10 issues, I thought Marvel really showed a lot of creativity and originality, which was a trademark of the Marvel Knights titles. They were all very strong.
Yeah.
It's a shame that their success was so enormous and then they became so formulaic again, you know? They showed a lot of initiative and sort of just like gumption in the way they went about the Marvel Knights titles.
Yeah,
and like, look, I don't know how well known Paul Jenkins was at the time that he wrote these, but he certainly is a gifted writer and has done many good things after this. But the whole concept, there's an issue I'd love to track down, Stu. I'm not sure if it's the issue, the wedding issue of Sentry, or if it's the issue. There's an issue where basically Sentry died briefly in like the late 2000s or mid 2000s. They did kind of like an issue of all the times he turned up that people had forgotten.
Yeah.
It's not included in this collection, but I have read it and I'd like to reread it having read this. I believe Paul Jenkins probably wrote it because I think he came back and did a little bit of stuff when Bendis brought him back. Because Bendis brought Sentry back from pretty much the dead. Like no one touched the character and then he sort of fished him out of the water.
Yeah, well, it's a tough character to work with.
Oh, definitely.
Because
yeah.
you're constantly kind of worried about if you use him as a powered character, you kind of have to bring back the Void.
Which they do as well.
Which you do, but the way they explain it, Sentry is written as one of the most powerful Marvel characters. The power of a million exploding suns is how it's described. He's like, he fought the Hulk to a standstill at the end of World War Hulk.
That's true.
The angriest the Hulk has ever been, and the Sentry fought him to a standstill.
Yeah.
The Sentry's gone toe-to-toe with Thor at the end of Siege. And
that was like, good, too. That was good.
He's taken on all of the biggest names in the MCU, and in Marvel, and come out, if not on top, at least equal.
Yeah.
So this guy is damn powerful.
Which is funny for a character that is really so recent and yet sort of weirdly so limited.
Yeah.
His appearances have been quite powerful.
Yeah, and they always run that risk of if you bring him back, then you bring the Void back.
Yeah.
And if he's so powerful, the Void has to be as powerful.
Yeah.
And at that point, there aren't many heroes that can take him down.
No.
You kind of run the risk of constantly having the same battle of Sentry versus Void as the only people it would work.
I think limited doses works well for Sentry.
Absolutely.
You know, like, choose your moment to use him, choose the story carefully. He's not a character you can just run month after month after month after month.
No, he doesn't have longevity.
No.
But for me, whenever I see them trying to recruit him... That's always one of my favourite parts in a story.
Sure. Sure. Jeff Lemire just did a short Sentry run that's been cancelled already, but apparently it's quite good. I read the first issue. It is interesting.
Yeah.
We might have done it on the show, actually. I'm not sure. A while ago. But anyway, I read the first issue, and seriously, if you're interested in Sentry Stew, you should probably check out Jeff Lemire's run. It's pretty interesting. Look, yeah, I mean, I would... Honestly, Stew's got that wonderful hardcover over there. This is on Marvel Unlimited. I read on Marvel Unlimited. Do yourself a favor.
It's on Marvel Unlimited. It's on Comixology. It's everywhere. Mm. It's 10 issues, but it feels much quicker.
Oh, I read it in pretty much a night. And it's quite compelling.
It is. It's a very quick 10 issues. Yeah, you find yourself going, I'll just read one or two issues, and you get through four or five.
Yeah.
Before you realize you
go. I got to the end almost of the one shots, and I was in bed, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to read to the end. I'm so close. Yeah. I want to find out what happens. And you know what? I even knew how it would end because I read later Sentry.
Yeah, exactly.
And I, even knowing that, I still was quite fascinated to see how they dealt with it. I really think it was better than I expected. I know you've given it good props and I assume it would be good, but I felt I got a bit more out of it. One thing I will say, because we are doing critiques here, I did feel some of the self-analysis in the five issues was getting a little tired. But he punched it up pretty well, and that's a very minor criticism. Like, overall, this flows very well as a story, and the one-shots are awesome.
Yeah.
They're great. I really, really enjoyed the one-shots, which use different artists, and then it all builds back to the void, and they use Jay Lee again with Paul Jenkins on writing duties. And Paul Jenkins writes all 10 issues, so there's a unity of style through the whole thing. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10, Stu.
I'll give it a 9.5.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's a really great little trade.
I honestly believe if you like that sweet spot, and I know Stu from the show is sweet spot, the early to mid 2000s Marvel.
Yeah,
it is a very strong period, and I hadn't read this one, so thank you for bringing that to the show, Stu. You've hit it out of the park again. We may have a difference with Harley Quinn, but I must admit, Stu doesn't know what he's doing with this. Now, what are we doing next week, Stu?
Well, next week we've got Daredevil Born Again.
Oh, that's right. I've already forgotten.
We've announced this on the show already.
We've already announced it. Spoiler alert for myself.
Because we will be watching some of, yes, if not all of Daredevil over the next week.
I'm
going to
make a serious effort. Like, really am looking forward to it.
Yeah. So that's coming out. We're going to do Daredevil Born Again to tie in with it.
Cool.
Which is going to be an absolute...
And we'll do a bit more Daredevil down the track, too. We're not abandoning Daredevil, but I think Born Again would... I honestly recommend, listeners, if you haven't read Born Again, read it before next show. It's a powerful comic. Oh, yeah,
please.
It's a powerful comic.
If you're going to read it along, it's on sale on Comixology right now.
It's not super long.
It's on Marvel Unlimited. Yeah. You can get it. If you've got a subscription, it's free.
Yeah.
But now is a great time to buy. It's all on sale.
Yeah, that's right. On Comixology, it's all on sale.
And this is one of... I would say the top 20 essential trades for Marvel, or for anything.
I'll make a comment right now. Born Again is in my top 10. And, yeah, it might be towards the end of the top 10, but it's in my top 10 of comic reads. Seriously. Yeah.
No, I agree. It's right up there.
Yeah. You know, guess the comic that's in the top two. Have a guess. It's not Punisher. Have a guess what the other one is.
It's not Punisher? Well, it'd be Conan then, wouldn't it?
Well, it's actually Edward Baker's Catwoman, right?
Oh, well, I know that's your number one. Yeah, that's been your number one for a long time.
Yeah.
But War Journal's got to be up there.
Yeah, it's right up there. Yeah, Punisher Warzone, Chuck Dixon, and John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have about three that sit on pole position. I kind of just rotate them a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, I'm not kidding. Like, Born Again Daredevil is in my top 10. It's brilliant. It's Frank Miller and
this
David
for me
Mann,
ranks right up there with things like Spider-Man Blue.
Yeah.
For me, World War Hulk is always up there. Planet Hulk.
Rightly so,
right.
Rightly so. World War Hulk was strong, man. Very strong.
Those are my absolute
Planet Hulk
favorite.
As well, dude.
Planet Hulk for me is,
I thought Planet Hulk was pretty fucking cool.
I mean, that's my number one.
Is it? Your number one?
Okay. Yeah, if I could only read one Marvel, one book, it'd be Planet Hulk.
I saw a thing the other day. Someone said, I went to a desert island and none of these fucking CDs helped.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That's a good one. I don't know what my number one Marvel would be, but Spider-Man Blue would be close.
Spider-Man Blue is definitely up there, and I think Born Again is right up there.
Oh, it is. It's strong. Look, Frank Miller at the peak of his power with David Mazzucchelli. We'll discuss it in detail next week. Any other tidbits, Stu? Shout out to the collective members. The collective members on Twitter have been a big part of making this show successful, and I really appreciate it. You know, it's great fun with these guys. Listen to the show, chime in. Listen to Inner Demons, the Ghost Rider guys. They're gods. Into the Night. We Have a Hulk. I am your type of demographic. Great shows and great friends of the Signal, and we really do appreciate them sharing out our shows and stuff. Stuart's a big part of what makes the Signal of Doom one of the best shows on the internet, if not the best.
Well, certainly a show on the internet, Dave.
Oh, jeez, man, pump up your own.
It is certainly that.
We're talking about Signal.
Yep, it's certainly a show on the internet.
We're out there, man. We're out there. We're representing. Stu doesn't handle the social media, so you don't understand the feedback I get. By the way, the feedback that we've received, I should mention, Michael Kellershin wrote in with a penetrating and interesting analysis, very complimentary of your solo show, Stu. Other than your munchkin, very complimentary otherwise. Very complimentary otherwise, as has others have been. And thank you to those people who listened while I was away in Hawaii and also when Stu was away last week, and they appreciate it. I always feel we're graded together.
Oh, look, thanks for listening. They are experimental shows and we're on our own
but things go
differently, and I think it's good to experiment with the format. See,
definitely.
You know, we might stumble across a massive success.
Who knows? Strippers in here or something. Maybe we can really experiment.
It's going to get weird quick, but...
I'll be okay. Of course, you'll be all right, yeah. What else was I going to say, Stu? I had something else to say, but I've forgotten already. Listen, I'm going to set up the voting button about this fucking Harley Quinn and Green Lantern thing, and I'm going to report the news back next week, Stu. Should we put a captain's call on the result?
No.
Oh, gosh. You said not fun, are you? It's not fun. Like, I don't know how they're going to vote. I seriously don't know.
I don't trust you in any way to set this up in a fair and...
Oh, gee, okay.
...unbiased way, I think.
I've already said that the voting is the voting.
I'm imagining the two options are going to be...
No.
The amazing Harley Quinn that you should vote for,
or the
shitty Green Lantern that definitely shouldn't vote for.
No, I'll have.
I imagine those being the two options.
I'll tell you how I'll do it. I'm going to try to be as fair.
And then you'll have a picture of Margot Robbie wearing as little as possible, and then animated green suit that no one liked.
What I'm going to have is a picture of comic book Harley and a picture of comic book Green Lantern. I'll try to pick very good pictures of each of them. Okay,
yeah, sure.
That's what I will try to do.
I have very little trust with you, Dave.
Well, you shouldn't have. You've done 84 shows with me, Stu, and I
well, haven't, Dave, because you haven't been here for four of them.
Well, four or five of them.
I've done 80.
80. And whatever.
79 shows.
Anyway,
with
whatever,
you, Dave.
Man. The fucking vote's going to be up. I know, and you can vote on your own fucking one as well. So you should get on the internet maybe and fucking lodge a vote.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, well, good. That means I got one vote my way, at least anyway. So, I mean. Yeah, I said don't show favoritism to your host, but maybe if you prefer me, Shelby.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, you
just justifying my initial.
You don't want a captain's call on it because you can have a captain's call if you want. I don't mind.
Oh, really? You're going to let me? Fall into this trap?
No, it's not a trap.
I'm going to pass, Dave.
Jeez, I feel you're not.
I'll put a captain's call on the 400 mil for Venom.
No, fuck you.
Go with that again.
Unless they pull it from cinemas tonight.
I mean, they might do that. We don't know.
Somehow, I think you should have put a captain's call on that. We should do that next time. We should do that for like fucking Shazam or something. We should pick a number. And see, up and over kind of thing.
Oh, well, Shazam would be interesting because I'm over and you're under. Automatically, I can tell you that my expectations are higher for Shazam than yours.
What do you think is a decent number this far out?
For Shazam?
Yeah. Like 500 million?
I would say, over 500 mil.
I'll put a captain's call on saying under. Do you want to do it right now?
Right now?
Fuck it, let's do it.
All right, done. Half a mil.
Half a mil US.
Sorry, half a billion?
Half a billion, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying it'll be under 500 mil worldwide.
Worldwide box office.
We'll go by box office mojo, which we always go by.
Yep, it'll be over 500.
All right. Lock it in, kids. When is this fucking movie coming? I want a captain's call. When do I get my captain's call? January 1.
If you keep making bets like that, you're never going to get a captain's call.
No, because I can use it on January 1 before I lose my bets. Anyway, enough already. Stu and I have argued long enough, fucking hard enough. Feels like the show's gone on for 10 hours.
Dave's falling asleep at the wheel.
Like us on Facebook. You should have done so already. That isn't an option. That's a command from your leader. Stu's also a co-leader, but he doesn't give commands. I do the commands. Email us in at signaldoom@gmail.com.
If you're going to like the signal, just unfriend Dave.
Messages on the Facebook page. You can unfriend me, but don't unlike Signal of Doom.
Oh, no, that's the deal.
You can unfriend me.
Yeah, dislike Dave, but like the Signal of Doom.
That's okay. That's all right.
We're okay with that.
Okay. Good night, kids.
Here he comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him, and there's dangerous work to do. Bet your life's eraser, see it through. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go! He's up and flying as he guns a car around the track. He's jamming down the pedal like he's never coming back. Adventure's waiting just ahead. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go!